Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we have our spoiler-free review of Bosch Legacy, and our topic this week, and the primary focus of the entire episode, are annoying TV tropes. Also, stick around after the normal show for our thoughts on the end of Ozark now that the show has wrapped up its final season. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
It's been a long week. I've been working on an Amber Heard alert for dating apps. And also Troy Heinrichs.
I'm decidedly less funny this week.
Already? We just got here.
You just drew a line in the sand.
I burned through everything in April. I'm back to square one.
I'm sorry. Every dad joke you ever had is exhausted.
Yep. It's a new year.
Do I need to send you like a truly tasteless joke book?
No, but you can send me a truly. That'd be great.
All right.
Isn't April part of the new year? I mean, it's a new month.
I mean, theoretically, it doesn't start until you see deer outside. Then that's the new year.
That's an interesting way to look at it, Midwesterner.
I see deer outside year-round here.
Well, then you're on a completely different lunar calendar than us.
You're in a completely different calendar year. Get it? You're in. That didn't work at all. I'm sorry. I don't even know why I tried. Amanda will not be here this week. We don't know where she is. She might be missing.
Or she might show up at any second now.
We never know what they're...
We are truly living in a strange new world. Just like Anson Mount is for Star Trek. She could beam in at any time.
We're beholden to her her penchant for lateness, I guess.
Sorry, I got a great joke.
Oh, boy.
Or at least a test for you. Would you rather receive a massage from a man or have an operation done to you, like a life-saving operation done to you by a woman?
What?
So I could get a massage from a man or I could get a splenectomy from a woman.
Right. I figured if we're just going to start picking on Amanda while she's not here, I might as well go full on.
Full on misogynist?
Yeah, why not?
Don't do that. Don't join that club. I would like the most qualified person for each one of those tasks, please. And I mean that because if someone's going to cut me open, I want the most qualified. And if someone's going to rub me down, I want the most qualified. And also that came out completely wrong. And I apologize.
Okay, Aaron, but what if it's a Spanish woman?
Even better. Win-win. Falls into my wheelhouse.
As long as them both end in a happy way, I think it's all good.
Stop it. Stop it. Jesus.
Go ahead, Luke. I'll pay extra for that.
We're going to move on before this gets too far in the... Wow. Just in the wild zone. All right. So Fast X director Justin Lin dropped out of Fast X a week into filming. Sources are citing he struggled with Vin Diesel's diva-ness. I think we can officially call him Vin Diva at this point based on all the reports. The top runner up for the job is Incredible Hulk director Louis Leterrier. He also did Now You See Me. So, I mean, he's done some okay movies. And he probably will take over the reins. He's in talks. We'll see if it works out. There's scheduling issues. But does anybody doubt? This is all I want to ask. Does anybody doubt that Vin Diesel is a diva at this point? That he is Vin Diva?
100%.
Yeah, ever since the Butterco incident of 2020 or 2019 or whenever that was, the guy couldn't learn enough Spanish to have a full sentence because it was too hard for him. So, yeah, he's diva.
I like how that's
at the same time, I mean, Justin Lin did bring back Han. So maybe this might be a good thing in disguise. I don't know.
Wow. Because it was ridiculous. I'm with you.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. The guy died.
Yeah. He died. Okay,
so the seven Han movies was ago. Ridiculous, but not going into space in a Supra.
We've done this already. Move on.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Please go back, though, because Troy has a wonderful scientific explanation for how that's completely plausible. Question mark.
And there were people that bought it. So I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So it's not the fact of whether or not it's plausible. It's whether or not people actually buy it.
That's exactly what he means, John. That is exactly what he means. Do people buy it? Sold.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, all of this drama about, you know, him picking on or going at it with The Rock and everything else, and not in the cool, sexy, oiled up way, just going at it. I'm just kind of tired of Vin Diesel at this point, and it's sad. I did love that franchise, but he's really sucking the fun out of it for me.
Does he have any other jobs lined up, like something else that really show, or is this all he's got?
Instagram posts. I think that's it. Where he's talking about how he's going to save the name Paul Walker or something. It's always Paul Walker or Pablo.
Well, I mean, Fast X is going to turn into that Triple X spinoff that we've been waiting for. So,
who's been waiting for?
Exactly.
He said we. So I'm assuming him plus someone else that he knows.
Plus the little mouse in his pocket.
Something.
I would rather take a Triple X spinoff than watch another Fast and the Furious movie.
No, because they're going to bring Ruby Rose back, and I'm going to have to get annoyed all over again.
Jesus. All right, let's move on. So TNT and TBS discontinued scripted programming, and there's only a few shows that remain. So they're only going to do reality stuff, whatever, because Warner Brothers Discovery has halted its scripted series on two channels. Only a few shows currently remain, so like we talked about. So, John, you wanted to bring this up. Why does this bother you? Are you a big Snowpiercer fan?
I'm not really a Snowpiercer fan, nor am I, you know, a big fan of anything that actually comes on TBS or TNT. However, I just think the idea of halting all their scripted shows is something that's interesting in light of this whole new merger of theirs. So of the scripted shows, TBS is keeping like four shows. They're all comedies. Two of them are already canceled. The ones they're keeping that haven't been canceled is Miracle Workers, which is the Daniel Radcliffe comedy. Mm. And American Dad is the other one that hasn't been canceled. That one actually just got renewed. And I think one more called Chad. And then Damon Wayans Jr.'s new show, just about to air its new first season, already canceled.
So, that's what he gets for the Lethal Weapon drama. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
What? He's got to pay for his dad's?
Yep. That's what happens. It drops generation. We'll get revenge one way or another.
Right. And then on TNT, what you got is Snowpiercer and Animal Kingdom, which Animal Kingdom's about to air its final season. So I just thought it was interesting how they're going to how they're really just chopping through a bunch of things to save $3 billion is what the idea is.
They just axed Wonder Twins too on, I think, HBO Max. They were going to do.
Really?
Yeah. Wonder Twins is dead. We literally just talked about this a couple weeks ago, and they've already canceled it. I mean, they're going through and they're saying, nope, nope, nope. They're already cutting back on a lot of what Warner Brothers has been building. They're going to streamline some stuff. I think they're going to get everything very clean.
Yeah. I'm not really too sad about Wonder Twins. Like, as far as DC heroes are concerned, they're a little too gimmicky, and they were really only designed around the Super Friends cartoon,
like Discount Heroes, right? I mean, they're the heroes. Yeah. When it's like the Walmart of heroes, you don't want to shop there, but they've got cheap aspirin,
right? But then again, so is Peacemaker. So okay,
Peacemaker was kind of its own thing. It's very novel. It's yeah. Kind of like its own special genre.
I'm just saying, as far as the show goes, I'm okay with them axing the Wonder Twins as long as they start bringing in some other stuff that's pretty interesting and cool.
Well, this is all coming from the Discovery side of the house, too, because the guy that's going to be in charge is basically a non-scripted head of programming in a way. So this doesn't surprise me at all that they would go this route. And especially when you think about what the future of the company is going to look like, especially being obviously standalone from AT&T, you have to really come up with that identity. And, you know, Discovery Plus, you know, could really start making a name for itself, you know, as a service if you get Discovery Plus tied to HBO. So if you're going to think about future investment, you know, HBO Max is where I'm going to put my scripted programming, if you will, HBO Max. Mm-hmm. And then all of my reality stuff will be on the Discovery Plus side of the house. Like, why do I even need the cable channels anymore? You just shut them down, or you just regurgitate your stuff as reruns from the streaming services in a way. And you're just, and then you just air basketball. That's the other option you have.
Other noteworthy cancellations from other channels, CW just axed Legends of Tomorrow. They axed Batwoman. There's a number of things they're just getting rid of, which I haven't watched any of the Arrowverse stuff in a while. So
it's going away, man. Riverdale's next, because that show is just all over the map at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if the CW itself ceases to exist very soon. I mean, it's just not profitable, and it hasn't been profitable in years. And I think Discovery is there, and they're going to discover some ways to cut some things.
They can easily cannibalize everything on CW into HBO Max and make HBO Max even more of a draw for streaming services go.
Sure.
Sure.
Should be interesting.
Except that CW is also partly owned by CBS Viacom, too. So it's a question of which catalog goes to which parent company, right? Because they're buying the content from Warner Brothers. So that content obviously would stay with Warner Brothers. So then what does CBS Paramount get for the Paramount Plus network off of the CW?
Scooby-Doo? No.
And they already have CW Ruh-roh. Seed, which is also a streaming service or a streaming platform, not a service. So it's a matter of, like, where does that roll into? Could they just pick that up and cancel that and move it into Paramount?
Well, they're already moving that stuff. They're already moving the CD, the seed stuff over into HBO Max.
Everything's going to be streaming, man. We talked about it last week. Like, we might as well start saying goodbye to network and cable TV. It's going to be just streaming. It's going to be the new cable. Less commercials, though, so I'm still happy.
We've talked a lot at length about how there's so much to watch out there. You know, there's so much to do. It's actually nice to see a corporation come in and decide, all right, let's start trying to, you know, clear up a lot of this mess.
Get the clutter out of there.
Yeah. All the old entanglement contracts, all the old, you know, you have to have this many views or this many shows, or it's only shown in these, like, get rid of the old concepts in general. You know, that's really the big thing. All we ever wanted at the end of the day was a way to just say, I don't want to pay for this month easily. Right. That's all we wanted.
Or cancel. I don't now, want to pay
I'll
for
pick it back up next month when my show comes back.
Now, do you do that, Troy? Because I really believe you do that. You will actually cancel a streamer and then pick it up 2 months later when something's on you want to watch. Is that true?
I have not done that yet, because if I would do that, honestly, Netflix would be the one I would drop. And only pick up like when Stranger Things came back or when Ozark came back, but other people in the house still watch Netflix on a regular basis. So I can't drop that one. Hulu is my broadcast television replacement. So until Grey's Anatomy, This Is Us, A Million Little Things finally go the way of the dodo, I still have to kind of keep Hulu around. And Hulu actually has some pretty good first run stuff, like Under the Banner of Heaven, which just kicked off this week. Getting great reviews already out of the gate. So check that one out. Paramount Plus, I buy the year, because I knew this was the year of Star Trek, so I'm in for the year whether Star Trek is airing or not, just because it was cheaper. And then I think this is my final year of Disney Plus on my pre-purchase 3-year plan.
Mine too.
So when Disney Plus is done, that's the first one I'm going to drop 100% cold turkey.
I would love
HBO
to.
Max is included in my cell phone plan for free, and Prime is included in my shipping for free. So
Kill Disney Plus right now. I never watch it. I never watch Disney Plus. But my niece is kind of, you know, we share a password. It's mostly I pay for it for my niece to have it. And she watches it 24 hours a day. So
till you make them pay for it, and then you get the password.
Yeah, I'll make the 8-year-old pay for it.
Put the 8-year-old to work.
That's right.
She can get a lemonade stand.
It's time you start learning how to make a living. All right, well, Troy, you want to talk about this Fox thing before we move on to the topic this week? So what is this Fox fall schedule situation?
Yeah, kind of
situation?
In the same guard, you know, with the getting rid of the old concepts. May is usually the time when you hear this thing called the upfronts, and then there was also the new fronts. Mm-hmm. And new fronts was more for the streaming services, and the upfronts was more for traditional broadcast. And at the upfronts for traditional broadcast, it's when they basically give you your fall schedule, and everybody got super excited. And some people out there may remember the giant Troy spreadsheet and putting it all together from back in the day. I haven't done the spreadsheet in 3 years now, because I just don't care about network TV. And
explain
apparently
what
Fox
that,
doesn't either.
Explain what that was for people that don't know what
I
you're
just,
talking about.
It basically was like the whole grid of everything that was going to come out in the fall. So I would basically write down, you know, which network it was on, what time slot it was on, and then I would color code it based on what was the new stuff, what was the returning stuff. And then what was the stuff I was going to watch, I put in like bright red, so I knew exactly where it was going to land, to see how many DVRs I needed in order to record stuff back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so like there just hasn't been enough on network TV that's worthwhile, that I just can't buy the season on iTunes or Apple Store or whatever it is now, Apple TV or Amazon. And the couple shows that I still watch are on Hulu, so the next morning. So really, I have no interest in what's coming out on broadcast TV unless someone else says something about it now. And so what Fox is doing is, and this is just rumor at this point, it's not official, but the rumor is that Fox is not going to release a fall schedule at the upfronts this year. It'll be the first time a broadcast network has not released a fall schedule. They're going to like flush it out more towards the fall itself, and they're just going to have people invest in shows rather than invest in time slots.
And what does that mean? In your opinion, what is that? Because I know you're kind of like the TV guy. You know more about TV than most people I know, and most television critics and TV personalities that I know. So what do you think that means for the future of Fox or network TV or anything?
I mean, there's two schools of thought here. One would be that they don't really need to have a fall schedule because they have so much football that the football is kind of like throws the schedule out of whack. So therefore, why release a schedule in the first place? Because it's all going to shift and move and flex and all that other fun stuff. And so the couple of shows they're going to need, because more than likely they'll probably throw some reality stuff on there, maybe one or two dramas and a comedy or two on Sunday night. So really, they don't even need a schedule because it's just the same thing that it's always been. They'll probably go back to the well for the fall and just have the same stuff that they've always been airing where people already know where it is. So the advertisers can just come in and go, oh yeah, I know that the animation domination is still on Sunday nights. I don't need to know what's playing. It's the same thing. Simpsons, Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, American Dad, blah, 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 right? It's just down the line. So when it comes to the spring, I think that's when you'll end up finding like, oh, hey, Fox actually has to put something out because they don't have that standardized whole of Thursday night football and stuff anymore.
American Dad is on TBS.
Doesn't it like re-air on Fox though?
Nope.
Nope. They moved it completely now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much I paid attention to broadcast TV. I don't care.
That's why I thought I'd point it out. I was just helping you illustrate your point.
He mentioned it earlier.
I think he was just being misogynistic and mansplaining, but.
Wow.
See, Troy, mansplaining actually.
Oh, see, there
actually means man explaining.
So technically, he's right. You were mansplaining.
He's right.
You were a man. You were explaining.
And he had to define it for me.
Right.
I appreciate you.
I'm just making sure that everyone understands that mansplaining is man explaining.
And it's seen as a negative, though. It's not a positive, usually. But if it's three guys talking, I think it's fine. You're just explaining to them.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm pretty sure the ladies have already left this episode.
A long time ago, they found out Amanda wasn't here, and they're like, why are we listening to these three idiots?
Right. You know, like, all right, well, peace out, bitches. They're out. not that they're bitches. We're the bitches.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure of all the things that I don't do is alienate a whole gender by calling them all. I meant you guys were calling us, not we were.
God.
I'm just going to go.
How deep is this hole?
This is pretty deep.
This sounds like the CW getting canceled right here.
Right. They're like, peace out, bitches. Oh, wait. Okay, not you bitches. Oh, damn.
What's funny is neither Troy or I are even trying to help you in any way, shape, or form. We're just like, go ahead, jump in the hole. Go ahead. Keep going.
That's fine. I can do this. I can take it.
And to show the slowdown of broadcast television getting back on topic, NBC actually only has one drama even in the running for the fall schedule, and that's the Quantum Leap reboot, Rebirth.
Wow.
Not exactly sure what's happening there.
They're not making money anymore. And they're devoting every resource to streaming. All of them are. You know, Fox has Hulu. You've got NBC has Peacock. ABC
has Hulu.
ABC has Hulu, yeah. But ABC and Fox, they're both owned by Disney.
Right.
So, yeah. And then CBS has Paramount Plus. I mean, they're all really divesting into streaming completely. I mean, I wonder what network TV is going to look like in 10 years. It's going to be interesting. And how
you still need your local channels and maybe some news programming, but you could do the news programming and put the news programming. I mean, I've watched CNN basically for free most of the time off of the web anyway, right? They're like, you know, watch CNN for the next, you know, 40 minutes for free. And it's like, that's all I really need to get the news for the day.
They run one story a day, man. So it's like whatever the hot story is currently, that's all they run all day long anymore. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I don't watch the local news because the local news is just going to be, you know, dire and depressing and Illinois politics. And it's like, who cares? I can read that on the web in like less time.
All right, then. Well, let's move on to our topic and we'll have a little bit more fun. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. You have to look for its private group. And we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. You can also share your thoughts on this episode or anything else by email at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or you can actually even leave a voicemail if you want to ask us something or have us talk about something on the show. 818-814-6246. That's 818-814-6246. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Annoying TV tropes. That's right. This week's podcast topic is annoying TV tropes. We're having a much simpler, kind of streamlined episode this week because we had the big summer movie preview last week. If you didn't know that I was there, please go check it out. We put a lot of work into the research and whatnot, so that's why we were taking it easy this week. We're just going to relax and talk about the things that piss us off or annoy the hell out of us. Those little things in modern TV shows that just to get on your skin a little bit.
Plus the 2-hour review of Ozark later.
Exactly. Maybe it's people never saying goodbye is a hang up. I've talked about that multiple times in the past about how that's a real annoying thing. And it happens all the time. I was just watching Ozark and it happened multiple times. Every time I watch anything where people are talking on a phone, they don't say goodbye. Take care. Drive safe. Whatever the hell you say when you hang up on the phone. Nobody ever says anything. And all I ever wonder is, in real life, wouldn't they just be going, hello, hello? I mean, every time they talk to anyone, wouldn't it just be annoying? Would it just be exhausting? It's just so rude. So rude. Maybe it's production related. Maybe it's story related. Whatever. We're going to talk about our most annoying TV tropes. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
I'm in.
So we're going to go basically round robin. We're each going to bring up one and then we'll just discuss it. Let's go to Troy first. What is your first annoying TV trope?
My first one is known as the rule of drama. This is where the character actually runs out of legroom in the script, in the story, and then you have to make something up in order to keep the conflict going, but it doesn't actually work out. Like, for example, giving somebody amnesia because they were attacked by a bear in a van, or bringing someone they thought that was dead back to life just to create a new dilemma for the story.
Give me some more example. I guess, give me a specific example. I'm trying to understand specifically what you're saying.
You know, like if you were like writing a story and you get to the point where you're like, oh, John and Troy are friends. We're doing great. Everything is fine. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, Aaron jumps out of the woods and slashes John's tires. Oh. And now Troy and John have to go figure out like who slashed the tires. Like,
so it's random, unnecessary story elements that make no sense.
Yeah. To create drama in order to keep the story going longer than it should have actually been on the air.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's stupid. Yeah. I hate that. I can think of like so many times that happened in shows like Grimm, but as many times as I've seen Grimm, it happened. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint each time it possibly happened, but it happened so much. Like the whole people accidentally seeing him turn into a Grimm or whatever else, and all of a sudden you got the useless people, the useless beaver people running around being like, oh my God, he's a Grimm. Okay.
Or those annoying, I mean, I'm only saying those are because they just recently barreled through all the episodes. But where they have yet another conflict that forces them into another conflict that now they have to figure out how to get out of said conflict because they got to get four more episodes to go. And like each episode has to spiral into a new conflict like that.
Wow. I feel like I just watched a show that I never watched.
It's essentially what happened. I mean, it's a lot of it. So it's kind of forced drama where, you know, if one person would just walk away from it, we'd be done a lot sooner.
Or it's like a sequel setup, because that's where this really shows up a lot, is where you have everything is resolved and it's all said and done. And then, boom, last minute, something shows up like everybody knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then now you have a whole new movie because of it.
Yep. Yeah. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Well, my first one is X hours earlier, 24 hours earlier, 3 days earlier. You know, kind of basically you begin the show with a spoiler of sorts of things that happen later in the season. 1883 starts with a kind of a pivotal scene that happens many episodes later. And that's just the most recent example. But I know Hawaii Five-0 did it all the time. A lot of procedurals do it all the time where they give you that X hours earlier, X days earlier. And then the episode then starts from the beginning and you build to that moment at some point in the episode. I hate that. It drives me insane because one, it's a spoiler. And I hate spoilers. I don't want to know what's coming because 1883, prime example. I love that show. I think it's a fantastic show and it was completely unnecessary. They only do it to, I guess, draw you in, but I think it's cheap because the entire series up until we get back to that moment, I'm waiting for that moment to happen. And I'm constantly just my brain is saying, okay, is this going to be the scene? Is that the scene? Is this coming up? Is it going to be this episode? And it's distracting. It takes you out of the series, I think, because I wasn't looking forward to it. I just wanted to be done with it so I could just relax and enjoy the show again. And to me, it's like a stressful thing. So that's one of mine. Do you guys get annoyed by this or does it bother you?
I actually tend to enjoy this one. If executed properly, it's a fun way to watch a show. It's fun. It draws you into the story much differently. You know, when you're waiting for something like that to happen, you're always looking for the bits and pieces that add up to that story element. So I like the puzzle aspect of it, and I like how watching this come together. So I'm actually for this one.
Yeah, I think it depends. It's a matter of if it's going to be new material and then the 48 hours earlier, that bothers me, like Aaron said. I think This Is Us did a really good job of this recently where they've been doing like different points of view. So they finished an episode with Sterling K. Brown's character talking to Kevin and saying like, what happened last night? And then the next episode started with that exact same scene. And then it went 3 days, you know, the night before. And then you actually see it from Kevin's point of view. I think that's what works well.
I don't mind that. That's fine. Because that's complete. It's not taking away from the story you're currently watching. That's presenting a story you hadn't already seen and it hasn't been presented yet. Right?
Right.
So to me, that's fine. But when you freaking tell me what's coming, and then I got to wait the whole episode to get back to that point, it's a huge spoiler. It's annoying, and I hate spoilers. I hate them, and I don't like this. John, I'm mad at you for liking this. That's what I'm saying.
Especially when it's over multiple episodes, okay. Right? Because I remember, even Ozark, right? The start of season 4 was very much that same way.
And even Lost did stuff like that.
Lost does it. Yeah, or, Lost does it all the time.
Season 5 of The Blacklist, right?
Tom's of course. Death. There's your
right. See it like the very first in the thing cup. In season 5.
It happens all the time. It happens all the time. Procedurals do it a lot. And I think that's because they're trying to get people to stay engaged. But, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And it just feels like a cheap storytelling thing that I just doesn't never work for me. Never works for me. All right, John, what's your first TV annoying TV trope?
All right, so my first annoying TV trope is something that is popularly called the Abilene Paradox, which is a scenario where a group decides upon the course of action that none of the individual members actually want to do because they falsely assume that everybody else wants to do it. So my best example of this is Aunt Mommy. It's an episode of Modern Family. Phil and Claire are on a double date with Cam and Mitch, and they drunkenly decide that between the four of them, that Claire is going to donate an egg so that Cam and Mitch can have a child who's born with their genetics. And it's by the end of the episode, everyone's kind of like having clearer minds going, I don't want to do this. And this seems crazy and seems weird. And it goes throughout the episode until one of them finally decides to fess up and everyone goes, oh my God, thank God. It's I didn't want to do it either.
What's it called again? Because I haven't heard of this one before.
Abilene Paradox.
Where I want to do something and then decide not to do it by the end of the episode.
No, it's where everyone falsely assumes everybody else wants to do something, but nobody actually wants to do it because everyone thinks everybody else wants to do it, that they go along with it for the entire episode.
Like the podcast listeners, like they're like, we shouldn't listen to the show, but we listen to the show because we know someone else is going to talk about the show. So we should then listen to the show.
That's hurtful. Because you're talking
Aaron.
About us.
Just Aaron.
I'm reading. Yeah, that's interesting. That's one I've never heard of that either. I've never heard of the Abilene Paradox, but it's a real thing.
I don't know. Like, I feel like that makes good drama because you're trying to understand people's point of view and unravel that point of view. So you get good character growth throughout it because you're coming from a place of like, I'm just going along with it from a codependent perspective, only to realize that you really didn't want to do it in the first place. So you understand each other better coming out of it, that we shouldn't be in a codependent relationship and we should be an authentic relationship, and it helps the characters grow. So I don't know. I kind of like that one actually from a storytelling narrative.
Feels like real family. Like just do it because so-and-so wants to do it. And I guess if we're doing it, everybody else wants to do it. Fine. I'm on board.
Do you have a different example other than Modern Family?
Nope, that's all. That's the only example I grabbed.
The Abilene Paradox.
I kind of get what he's saying. I think it's a comedy staple. It's a comedy staple.
It is a comedy staple, and the reason why I get frustrated with it is because it's a staple in just about everything that's out there. But the thing that always frustrates me is this is the one of those things where it's like, why can't you people just talk to each other like you actually care about each other, and this would all be done. All of this would be done. Why, if you just said the words, this would be done. And this goes back to one of the ones that, which somebody brought up one that was like pretty much the same thing, which is if you just didn't do that, the story would be already over. And there goes another 5-second episode of whatever show you're watching.
Well, I mean, that's a problem with all of storytelling in TV because they're desperate to come up with a different episode, right? Like a new episode. So they're constantly coming up with drama or issues that people have with each other that don't make any sense. That if they would just have a conversation, it would be over, right? If they would just have a simple conversation and actually discuss whatever the situation was, there wouldn't be a dramatic issue that, whether it's a comedy and comedy revolves around it through the entire episode, or it's a drama and it like creates drama for a whole episode. I mean, it's just a miscommunication that would be resolved by a simple conversation that apparently nobody in TV world likes to have.
Right.
So it's really just a false agreement. Like we're all sitting around the house and mom and dad go, hey, let's go ahead and go get dinner. But nobody really wanted to go get dinner in the first place. And it actually becomes worse because you went to dinner rather than just staying home.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, and I think John was speaking of Kyle Nolan in our Facebook group. He commented when we were asking about this topic. He said, the thing that always annoys me is when there's a misunderstanding solely because people didn't take the 2 seconds to talk and clear things up. Like if someone sees their partner with another man or woman and they assume the worst and retaliate before even talking, which is a great example. That happens all the time.
Right.
Well, I suppose, yeah, then it sucks from a TV perspective because that's life. That happens all the time. I don't need to watch it in TV. I want to be taken out of my life.
Well, but they use it as a crux for a plot device. I mean, it's just, sure. Just have the conversation. I mean, in real life, if you saw your person with another person, you'd be up to me like, why are you with them? And then you hit them in the face and then you leave.
With a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
When you find out when they were just there to hand you a publisher's clearinghouse check for $1 million.
See? And then you feel stupid. You dumb.
Yep.
And no, you never hit him in the face. That's a Will Smith thing.
You also never accept the publisher's clearinghouse check.
It's true. I don't even know they still have that. You're dating yourself, Grandpa.
Why don't you ever accept it?
It's like a pyramid scheme scam in a way.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. You get you to buy stuff.
I don't know.
I don't know. I never want it. Ed McMahon never showed up in my house. And I'm also not 112 years old, still expecting it to happen. Troy, what's your next TV trope?
My next one that I have is called The Color Wash. This is the artistic choice by the director to change the entire color palette of everything, making it like a certain color or a whole entire, what do you want to call it? Palette template, if you will. Mm-hmm. So Ozark, I think, is probably the best example of this because once they get to Missouri, like everything is just blue. There's like this blue hue on everything. I keep having to turn the brightness up on my phone and on my TV.
Breaking Bad's just, very yellow. That's very...
Yeah. You know. And then when you get to Chicago or Mexico and Ozark, it's like, boom, bright colors. Like, they're just trying to symbolize like the lake effect. And I just don't think it's necessary for the... Like, the whole time they're... It's like, even in the casino, it's blue. It's like, you don't need to be blue all the time. It's super annoying.
What if they are blue? I mean, they're very sad a lot of the time.
Which could be an artistic choice. I understand that. Like it could be like a metaphor, but it's hard to watch.
It can be. It is kind of great. I think it looks kind of, I think it looks cool because it separates it and it differentiates it. And when you're having a conversation, everybody knows what that means. And I've heard Jason Bateman talk about this because he's directed multiple episodes. That it's an intentional choice, obviously. And, you know, why they do it, he doesn't really talk too much about it. It's just more of, it's supposed to represent now we're in the Ozarks. Now it's blue. And I get what you're saying, though. I mean, it is a little distracting. On the same token, if it's not a distraction that takes you out of the show, it doesn't take me out of the show, but it is something you notice and you can have a conversation with people about. Isn't that a good thing? Because that's what TV wants, right? They want you to be talking about their show to other people.
Yeah, I think Ozark does it probably maybe better than others because of the way they're trying to do it. The Matrix comes to mind. Right. Everything has kind of like the green hint when they're in the Matrix versus not having the green hint when they're not in the Matrix. So I think there's definite cases for where it works. I think it's the people that just do it because they think it's cool or they think it's creative.
Sure. That happens a lot.
Yeah, it happens a lot. But I tend to enjoy it when it's...
Well, you're an artist.
I don't ever notice it when... Yeah, I don't ever notice it when it's done poorly, but I always notice it when it's done well.
That's a good way to look
at it. It's one of those weird things.
My second one is ending any modern TV series on a raging cliffhanger. Unless you are guaranteed to be renewed, you already know you're being renewed. I think it's shameful in this day and age, first season, second season, any season at this point, to end a series on a major cliffhanger. Unless you're 100% guaranteed to be renewed. Unless you already know you are renewed. Like Cobra Kai can do it because they know they're coming back for like a year or two. You know, Witcher can do it. They know that they're coming back for season 3 and 4 or whatever. That's
Archive 81.
What's that?
Archive 81. Go screw yourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like in this day and age with so much content out there is zero excuse to end something that we don't know if we're going to get picked up again, to end something on a major cliffhanger, because what they can easily do, and people always, I've had this conversation with people and they get the pushback that, well, they're trying to hook you to bring you back so that you'll come back and watch the second season. I'm like, I get that. But they could easily, writers write, come up with a conclusion just in case it gets canceled. You know, script and film a separate conclusion, a smaller, compact, whatever resolution that can be tacked on if you do not get renewed. Something that compactly ends the story. Because I just think it's me. I just think it's an insulting to people that are watching all these shows if it constantly ends on a cliffhanger.
Or you could do something where the what looks like a cliffhanger could also be an additional part of the story. So I'm thinking of, oh my gosh, the woman across the street from the girl in the window on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one ended in a way that because of what happens in the end, you actually question the entire arc of the entire first season. Or you could say, oh, there's a new story developing here and it could be a second season. So you could take it both ways. I think that's really creative because you don't know if it's actually a cliffhanger or if it's actually just to make you think about what you just saw.
I think about Stargate Universe, the way that show ended was the entire crew of the ship puts themselves into a stasis because they have to cross over a border of nothingness. So that's what I think of when I think about something that ends in a cliffhanger and they did not get picked up for a third season.
And then you're just left hanging. And it's just
right.
Or sleeping in that case.
Yeah, I mean... It's funny. Networks, it's not even fair to say networks, streamers, whoever, studios, they need to make those decisions earlier and let the creators know because they're every time they do that, I say it's a slap to their entire audience. Always have. And I firmly believe it. And I think it happens more so now than ever because there's so much content out there. It's hard to make anything stand out. And if you're Netflix, you got 1,000 shows that you're dropping every single week, you know, only 9 of them are going to come back. So stop doing that. Stop leaving things on a cliffhanger. Archive 81 didn't need a cliffhanger, did it, John?
Nope. Didn't need it.
Could have wrapped it up. Be done with it. But no, you got well, let's roll the dice. Well, it's just, now you're left hanging a little bit. It's not right.
What, I guess the question is like, what do we consider like a modern day cliffhanger though? Because I'm thinking like Westworld season 3, you know, at the
end. That was very compact at the end. Like the story was told, actually all 3 of the seasons of Westworld were kind of told within the, where you would be, you could comfortably walk away from Westworld at the end of season 1, the end of season 2, the end of season 3, and still feel like you weren't, you could put the pieces together in your head. So it felt like a more compact story, like a more.
Yeah. But do you think the Bernard thing is considered a cliffhanger?
No, I think a cliffhanger is major story elements that are unresolved.
Okay.
And you know, major overlying mysteries. Now if you've got like a series long mystery, That's a different conversation, I suppose, because, you know, if you made it 3 or 4 years and then you get canceled, I still think the studio should make sure that you get some kind of resolution. Let them know ahead of time. Let them know freaking 3 months ahead of time, whatever. You know what the ratings are, or you know how many people are watching it. I know a lot of that is filmed way ahead of time. So just have a story element that is scripted and filmed, maybe a short cap, an end cap that says, hey, we got canceled. We had to drop this one in here. It's the best we could do. Something.
Yeah, like Timeless comes to mind. The fact that, or even Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, where there was a pretty big moment that happened at the end, and at least bring it back for the quote-unquote special or, you know, 2-hour movie finale or whatever it would end up being. Like, those are the things that absolutely need to have that happen in order for it to close up shop.
I mean, honestly, I don't think the studios seem to understand that specific concept is a big reason why people don't jump onto first season shows as much anymore. They want to wait and see if it's going to get renewed. I do it all the time. I mean, unless it's something that's really, really getting buzzed about, or it's a high concept or you know, Marvel show or something. I don't jump into it unless I know it's going to be renewed. People are raving about it. It has a decent ending in the first season. Like I just don't want to invest my time in endless possibilities anymore. I want to know what I'm spending my time on. There's too much content to waste it. All right, John, what's your next TV trope?
So my next one is the Achilles power cord.
Are you just looking for fancy shit?
No, I'm not just looking for fancy shit. I just happen to find fancy shit. Okay. That's all.
Achilles power cord.
Achilles power cord. You know, it's one of those things where you got a device or a robot or something that, you know, is super powerful and will destroy you and destroy the world, but it has something as simple as a power cord you can pull on to shut it off.
Yeah, okay.
The example I have for you is on an episode of The Office, Michael wanted to build a robotic memorial statue to his old boss. And so somebody suggests, well, you better put a short power cord on there, because if you don't, it's going to kill everybody. And also, let's think back to something as simple as Godzilla versus Kong. What did they end up doing to kill Mechagodzilla? They did the Achilles power cord on him.
Oh, I get this one. So this is like Naked Gun 2.5.
Yes. Where
he's walking along and he trips over the cord, which actually diffuses the nuclear bomb.
Yes.
Okay.
Or it's just something that's very simple, where it's a very complicated concept, but it's very quickly resolved. Like, say, I don't know, say you have a bazillion White Walkers and you kill one of them and the rest, they all die. Would that be a power cord?
That works.
Okay.
Yeah, that works.
Didn't bother me.
If they got their power from the one person, then yeah.
Yeah. But it was a very simple solution.
It didn't bother you, but you're the one that chose that example.
So obviously you're thinking about it.
Everybody bitches about it. I do not. It does not bother me because it's the old vampire theme, right? You kill a head vampire, they're all dead. It's been like that forever. All the
vampires die.
Yeah. Pretty normal concept. Unfortunately, they just didn't like it. Wanted this. They want people want things. But I'm just saying, that seems like an example of what you're talking about. I like it.
My next one is called the no antagonist trope.
Do I got to start making up phrases for these now? Because you sons of bitches with your fancy phrases. I think I do.
I mean, these are the problem is basically they're trying to solve is not a person, but a thing. So the most recent example of this is Ted Lasso, right? In the first season, Jamie Tart and Rebecca, they're kind of like the antagonists of the show for the entire first season. And then because their whole arcs get resolved, basically, by the season two ends up becoming mental illness is the antagonist. So when you have that like thing that's not really a person or a situation that you're going after, when an inanimate object becomes the antagonist, that's a trope that I, even though Ted Lasso season two is really good, you know, typically, you know, when they say like, we're going to fight against this imaginary something or solve this imaginary something, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out as well as you probably could. Medical shows are this way a lot, where the problem becomes like, you know, oh my gosh, we got to get the kidney in time or whatever it is.
I mean, I really liked that aspect. I think I'm probably on the opposite side of you on this one. I like an unseen threat, a mystery foe, if you will, or dramatic device. As long as it reaches some kind of depth or real conclusion, I can buy it.
Yeah, even in your own example, you were like, well, they did it on Ted Lasso, but it was actually really good. And then you didn't really come up with something that was bad.
Oh, no, like every medical show, when you're talking about like we have to get the kidney and the kidney has to get like, and then you like drive off a cliff and the kidney's in the cooler and you have to like save the car from the cliff because it's all about the kidney. It's like, don't forget about the four people in the car that you've been watching the show this entire time and love these characters. They're going to risk their lives for the kidney.
Okay, I got you.
It's 8 more kidneys.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of stuff that just drives me crazy. It's like, no, don't worry about this kid, this main character who has 2 kids at home and a spouse. No, we're going to worry about the kidney. Okay.
Yeah, but that's also 8 more kidneys. Like, that's...
It's 4 more people. Like, well, I guess they each have 2, right?
Depends. Yes. What if it was a brother that already gave up one of his kidneys to somebody else?
Yeah.
So. There's a whole brother story that you could be going with and like, I got to save you, man. I got to save you, man.
And then you got a whole like, story.
We got to go save that situation. Dude that's already dead, almost dead, laying on a hospital gurney that we haven't seen the entire 700 years of show.
Yeah, but that guy can probably cure cancer or something.
Oh, God. That leads me to the unseen family member that pops up like 8 years into the show. Then suddenly they're a very pivotal part of the show because they're desperate to keep. Oh, I didn't even know you had a brother. Never mentioned him in 7 years. Well, you know, we don't talk much. In 7 years, we've been in love. And you didn't mention you had a brother? We didn't get along so great. Did you live together most of your life?
I actually had that same conversation with my therapist.
It's just weird.
My therapist was just like, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, well, my brother's going to come visit. He's like, you have a brother? I'm like, yeah. He's like, why is this the first time I'm hearing about him?
I don't think you're doing your therapy very well if you haven't mentioned that you have family. I think that's part of it.
I only mentioned the things that drive me nuts, and my brother is not one of them.
Fair enough.
He only talks about you and I.
Nope.
I don't think we even come up. Either. He's like, you don't even exist in my therapy session, bitches.
Yeah, no.
All right. So my next one is, it has to do with specifically episodic television that is procedural, because it's almost always procedurals, where the characters never evolve. Any show where the characters never evolve, where they never grow, where they don't change, and they're literally, if you watch the show at the first episode and you watch the show at the last episode, they are the same people. To me, it's a big staple of procedurals because they don't want the characters to ever change, and it's just old. You know, I've got a prime example. Law and Order SVU, right? Love Law and Order SVU. And I love that they're very episodic and they're kind of by the numbers. But Olivia on that show really has evolved throughout the series. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. I'll say that.
But Stabler comes back. You know, he was on the show for many, many years, and he comes back with his own show. He's literally the same guy. I feel like he hasn't evolved one iota since the beginning of that show. And it's just like he's been through all this stuff, but he's still the same freaking guy. He hasn't changed really at all. And that just drives me nuts. But procedurals in general, I mean, Hawaii Five-O is a show I loved. I'd love to watch it. It's mindless fun. But I could tell you, McGarrett is the same dude from the first day to the last day. Same with Dano and the rest of everybody on the cast that stuck around to the end. And I mean, it's just an annoying trope that I just don't like. If you're going to make a TV show that runs for years and years, make your characters evolve. Do something new, different, change them up, something. Because we change as people. Nobody's with me?
I can see both sides of why this is both good and bad. Yeah, the whole bad thing, you're absolutely right. One of the reasons why I stopped watching some shows like Castle is that I felt like by the time I got to where I was falling asleep more because Castle's going to show up. He's going to say some quippy lines. He's going to do some of this, do some of that. He's going to flirt with what's-her-face. They're going to get in a fight, and then they're gone. Some of the other shows that I stopped watching for the similar reasons, because it got so predictable that because the character never really changed. I do see why that's a bad thing. However, sometimes, you know, you just want to sit there and watch something where somebody doesn't change on you mm-hmm. and somebody stays the same and somebody is, you know, you can trust that person's going to do the right thing every single time. That's actually not bad.
And I think that right there, why you like it, and it's exactly why you like sitcoms and I don't mostly. Because sitcom characters typically never evolve. They're the same people, so you can feel comfortable. I mean, look at Friends. I don't think anybody changed that whole show the entire time it was on. Now, granted, I didn't watch it because I didn't like it. Because it wasn't representative of anything I grew up with. So I didn't, you know, really lean to it. But I've seen episodes in multiple seasons, and they are the exact same people. Like, nothing changed.
Yep. I'll agree with that. But I don't watch a lot of sitcoms, so I probably love three shows that are sitcoms, maybe two, probably one. Who knows? I'm not counting.
If you're counting them, you obviously knew what they were in your head. So what are the sitcoms you're watching?
Well, right now I'm back on How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We're not doing it.
No, pass. He asked, man. I wasn't going to say anything about it.
Jesus.
Why did you go back to the well on that one? I guess that's the question.
Do you want the real story or do you want me to make something up real quick?
Make something up.
I want the real story now.
Oh, boy. Go ahead. Nobody cares what I think.
Well, you see, and scene.
Okay. John, what's your next trope?
All right. So my next trope is the one where a chick's got to dress up like a prostitute, try to get the bad guy.
Please explain. And if you could, do it slowly.
And if you knock on the Super Bowl episode of Alias, I'm coming through the screen and killing you.
Well, I mean, like the entire show of Alias, there you go. Like
that is the show, though. That is the show, though.
That is the show. I mean, but not that she, you know, she was a fine, she was great. Okay, so anyhow.
Wow, that was some tap dancing.
My example for this is actually from an episode of Arrow. It's the episode titled Invoked, where a character dresses up like a prostitute because she's got to catch the villain of the week. So she goes to one of the Arrowverse guys, Roy, and she says, Roy, hey, I got to dress up like a hooker. Do you have anything for me? And Roy's like, let me ask my girlfriend. Hey, this girl needs slutty clothes. You have anything for her? And the girlfriend's like, here, wear this. This is from my usual wardrobe. It's going to get you a second date, no problem. And you're like, wait a minute. Did Roy just go, oh, you need slutty clothes? Let me go to my girlfriend. Okay, that's a little bit much. But anywho, yeah, it just drives me nuts because I think you can find much better, more intelligent ways to have women do this sort of thing where they can be a hero without having to sacrifice any sort of whatever it is they're sacrificing. I mean, I'm okay if she wants to dress up like a prostitute to have to. I don't know.
But what if the thing you're trying to infiltrate is actually a strip club?
You don't have to dress up a prostitute or to infiltrate a strip club. You have to dress up like a stripper.
This is fascinating. And by the way,
sometimes.
I've never liked the term slut because it really it just implies somebody that's having more sex than you. Don't be mad at them. Don't be mad at them because you're not as successful.
Using the terminology that I looked when I was looking this one up.
Okay.
Hey, if I could run an OnlyFans myself, I totally would.
Like you would be the guy? The visual?
Yeah,
the
I'd be like, here's my feet. Yeah.
I would totally. Quentin Tarantino would sign up.
Yeah.
Boom.
Now, if you could draw your art with your toes, that might be something that we'd want to see.
I would pay for that. That would be impressive. Really, if you really want to be an artist, there you go. Find a niche.
Hey, yeah. I'll find it. I'll use my butthole.
No.
Jesus. What is happening right now?
Oh, man.
I guess to extend to what you're saying, I don't like when they sexualize characters just because they're attractive women. You know, if it's a show that does it for any character, okay, it's fine. But if it's just, okay, we have to sexualize, there's one pretty woman on the cast, so we have to dress her up in the tiniest clothes because she has the figure for it. And it's that always kind of annoys me. In this day and age, I mean, I feel like we should be past that. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why didn't they have Sipowicz running around the tube top and miniskirt?
Exactly.
Because that would sell the show for sure.
That would.
Sure would.
Instead, they had to bring the girl from Saved by the Bell on the show. Come on.
Yeah. That'll do it. All right, Troy. Last round. Give us a TV trope.
Mine is called The Click Tour. So this is a quick rundown of all the groups involved in a particular setting. Best seen probably in things like Clueless or The Wonder Years. Wonder Years specifically, Kevin scans the cafeteria and you have your cool kids and you had your smart kids and you had your gracers and you had all these other types and these hippies and whatnot. Probably it's just like, I don't want to be told who everybody is. I want to be like introduced to who everybody is as the show is going along. So when you just like whip through it in like 5 seconds at one episode, it's like, oh, okay. I got it. Veronica Mars was guilty of this too in the pilot of telling us who all the Niners were inside of that zip code.
Yeah, I get why this is frustrating because ultimately the point of a story is to show you the story, or the point of television and movies is to show you a story and not tell you what the story is. And these are one of those things where they don't trust you enough to be able to figure out who's who. So they gotta pull up exactly who they are and be like, we want you to have this predisposed idea of who this person is. We want you to have this predisposed idea of this who this person is, so that later on in the series they can probably, oh, let's spin it around and this person who is a stoner was actually a genius and this is what he created and this is what he's good for, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, because most of the time when this happens, it's literally the stereotypical, like, you know, exactly what you would think they were. But, you know, maybe the mean girls are actually the nerds.
Right.
Would be an interesting story to find out and be like, holy crap, I was misinterpreting this the entire time.
Or maybe they're really sweet. They're not mean girls. You know, I mean, there are very popular, attractive women, girls, teenagers, whatever, that are very nice, very kind, very gentle. And that I never, very rarely do I see that represented, where a very popular, very attractive teenage girl is actually kind and friendly, unless they're the star and it's a movie. And again, a TV show, very rarely. It's always some awkward, geeky character. Da, 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 da. Same with guys, you know, when very attractive, handsome jock, and he's always like just a jackass. Always. Why? Let's go against type now.
Or you get the giant alpha male, like, you know, Viking looking dude with the beard and you think he's going to be some like rough, big motorcycle dude
and he's an angel.
Slaps people around, but really he's just a soft teddy bear on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We need more of those characters. So my last one is producing a series below its necessary budget. That's become just with so much content. It's just not acceptable anymore. I'm not going to watch something that looks cheap. The CW, my example is the CW. It's the entire network. All their shows I think look like crap. Especially when you compare it to so much content that's on streaming now. If you watch any of the CWDC shows and whatnot, I mean, their effects aren't awful, but they're definitely distracting, at least to anybody that's seen better quality work done on the cheap. And you know, they spend decent money on these shows, but you go see, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once, right? Fantastic film. Very low budget. they had five people that work on the special effects team. That film looks better than any in any Arrowverse show that's been out.
Monsters, Gareth Edwards movie, where it was just him, the two stars, and two stars and his laptop.
It just looks really, really chink. And God, on the Arrowverse shows, I'm sorry, with those costumes, you would be laughing if you came across them in the real world. You wouldn't be able to take them seriously with all their darkness, because you'd just be like, would you just leave like a Spirit Halloween, whatever it is?
Hey, if you're picking on Katie Lotz, we're going to have words.
Picking on all of them. Their shows look cheap. And there's a lot of science fiction shows out there that, you know, they needed a bigger budget to really pull off what they were trying to go for. And it's just, I think in this day and age, if you don't have the budget for it, don't do it. Hold off and wait until you're going to okay the right budget for it. Make it something that's going to look stellar, you know, or not even stellar, just that passes. Or cut back on the things that are required. Like, if you don't need a lot of science fiction outside shots, if it's a space opera or whatever, you don't need 1,000 shots of ships flying around to establish where they are. Everybody kind of knows where they are. The Orville doesn't use a ton of those. I mean, and there's a reason for that, because it saves a fortune to not use them. That's what I got. John, last one.
Yeah.
So my final one is going to be one that's called the Jealous Clingy Girl. The example that I have for this is from my ER. Both my examples actually come from ER, which, Mark Green's first wife gives him a hard time because of his friendship with Susan Lewis. And he repeatedly has to assure her that nothing's going on between him and Susan. It becomes a whole thing in the show. And then his wife turns around, and then she's the one who ends up having the affair. That's just a pain.
Sounds like real life to me.
Right.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you, but usually the people that are most jealous, you know what I'm saying? Always ones you got to watch out for.
They're jealous because they're also envious because they're not having it happen to them. Or B, it's because they're being jealous because they already did it and they're fighting back before they get caught.
Exactly. It's some mind game stuff.
I don't like the annoying clingy girlfriend. I mean, like, or even boyfriend. It doesn't have to be sexist here, John. We could go both ways.
Jeez. Troy is having a day painting a picture of you, boy.
What?
the thing with the clingy significant other.
Ooh, well played.
Is whether or not they become super annoying about it and it becomes the focus of the show or film, so that it draws the attention away from what you're really supposed to be focusing on. So is it taking away from them repairing the relationship or talking about the relationship or figuring out what they need to do about the relationship? Like, that's the story element. So if the annoyance part of it is overshadowing the resolution part of the story, I think that's where it becomes an issue. I can't believe ER is the only option of that you could find.
When was the last time ER was on? The 90s?
I was trying to be a good host and bring up other shows as opposed to the five that are living in the Rolodex in my brain at the moment.
I understand. I mean, is there anything in the last 20 years you could think of pull from that?
I just wanted to be
good. What about the annoying clingy girl that dresses like a hooker? What about that? Is that in there somewhere?
I mean, she's actually my favorite. Let's just be honest. Especially if she's dressed like a hooker.
All right. Let's pull up some listener thoughts in terms of what their most annoying TV tropes are, and then we can discuss. Stuart Bannerman said, not so much done now, but when shows used to show you a highlight reel of things you were about to watch in that very episode, you know, like the Battlestar Galactica did that in the title sequences, but 80s shows were the worst for the highlight reel stuff. I don't think that happens much now, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't notice it nearly as much anymore, but it was totally something that was something from the 80s or even the 90s. You know, the whole thing would be a highlights reel. So
basically,
yeah.
Stuart hasn't watched TV since you did, you know? So he's just he's referencing the ER era.
Don't judge.
Andreas, he says, I get sick of shows that put the budget for special effects, expensive locations, or action sequences into one episode, and the next three episodes are two people walking through the woods for 45 minutes talking about uninteresting shit. Best example, The Walking Dead. Let's discuss. I agree.
Well, I guess it depends on when that happened, right? Because sometimes two people walking through the woods is all you could do in the last 2 years because of the COVID pandemic in order to make sure filming continued.
Maybe, but I get what he's saying. That's been on that show since day one, where they would have like a big battle, and it happens in a lot of shows where they put all the money into a couple episodes and the rest of the time they're just sitting around a table having conversations about the big battle that's going to happen.
which is probably one of the better episodes of Game of Thrones.
I mean, that's true. But in Walking Dead, I don't understand. By the way, can we give a shout out to Melissa McBride for, you know, she's got that spinoff. They were doing a Daryl and Carol spinoff.
For bailing on the spinoff?
For being bigger and going like, I don't need the dead in order to live anymore?
Yes. Let's give her some, seriously, let's explain it real quick. There was going to be a spinoff, Daryl and Carol, where Norman Reedus and Melissa McBride were going to go off and do their own show. And I guess it was going to film in England or something. And she decided that she couldn't do it because of whatever personal reasons. I think, she, you know, for whatever reason, she didn't want to do it. And so she pulled out. So now it's just going to be the Daryl show, which is good for Norman Reedus. By all accounts, he seems to be a great guy. Good for him if people want to watch it. But also, you know, I saw a lot of people were just kind of trashing her for pulling out when they were so excited for this. But if she's doesn't want to do it, good for her. I think that she's ready to move on. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I respect that. I respect that she made that choice.
She can be a lot more things than Carol at this point. And that's she's a great actress. It's going to be great to see what she can be.
She's honestly been the best thing about that show, my opinion.
Mm-hmm. By far.
Yeah. With you, Andreas, too. I it's really annoying. Spread it out, man. Spread it out. Ty Nelson, this works for both TV and movies, but depressed character sinks to the bottom of a pool while a thoughtful ballad plays on the soundtrack. Bonus points if they're wearing sunglasses and or drinking a beer while sitting on the bottom. Yes. I'm really, really tired of that, especially because why do they always have to be drinking or doing something else destructive when they're depressed? Can they not just be sad and sitting in a chair and contemplating without the musical overture going over them?
Well, that's because it was ruined by Cameron, because Cameron was the ultimate depressed sitting in a chair, and then he just happened to roll forward into the pool. So no one else can be in a chair, because if he rolls forward in the pool, then you're taking it away from Cameron's performance.
Fine. Back to Ty's trope. Do you guys agree with this?
I don't understand why I'm going to go jump in a pool and sit in the bottom of a pool. There's 1,000 different ways I can be depressed. I can sit on the train tracks. I could, sit on hot coals.
I could sit on train tracks.
Why does it have to be in a pool?
That's a good point. It happens all the time.
The train hits you, you go a lot faster than you drown. I mean, drown, you could like hold your breath for 2 minutes potentially.
I just want to know.
This is going so weird.
Well, that's Troy. He's weird. We've all been, you know, depressed at some point in our life, right? I've never looked cool when I did it. I looked like a very sad panda. And very rarely do they actually represent what real depression looks like. They're either trying to make it look stylistic, which is dumb. It's not something that should be looked at stylistically. Or they're always trying to jazz it up and make it look cool, as opposed to what it really looks like, which is traumatic. You know, 13 Reasons Why did a really good job of this, but most shows don't.
Yeah. If I'm depressed, I'm like bawling my eyes out, and then I slipped on the deck because I couldn't see the thing that was on the deck that I tripped over, where I fell in the pool, where I hit my head and then ended up dying because of the head injury, not because of the drowning.
What is wrong with you? Like, Jesus. What is actually wrong with you? I'm concerned for your future safety.
I'm just trying to get the trope out of the thing. There's like better ways to like be depressed and drown at the same time that are much more entertaining.
Last one, because we already talked about high school cliques, and Jennifer Miller brought that up too, but Becky Trumbo, dramatic endings to scenes get me. In real life, they wouldn't be able to just cut to the next scene and go to commercial. It would be super awkward to have to leave together or finish what they were doing once they stopped staring at each other. That's a great one. Might be my favorite one of all, because I can't tell you how many times I watch something where, you know, they're having a conversation, you know, they're going to have to get in a car, and it's a really, really uncomfortable conversation. And they don't show the car ride home, or they don't show anything after that fact where, you know, they're going to be together and have more awkward conversation. And I just find it weird. I just keep picturing what was the drive home like. It's kind of annoying.
Because the drive home is super quiet because they don't talk anymore because it was already awkward before they got in the car.
Or they'd be fighting like crazy or, you know, something. I mean, that feels like it's just weird. Why do you have these weird conversations? See, in real life, I think people have awkward conversations in a specific moment where they're definitely not going to see that person for a while or for their parting ways at that point. You never have the awkwardness before you're ready to part ways. It's like the last thing you do. You know, you're hanging out with so-and-so and you're like, well, I got to ask about that one time he hit on my girlfriend, but I'm going to wait until we're done hanging out at the arcade, right? Does anybody go to the arcade anymore? Probably not, but So you're leaving whatever you're doing. That's when you do the awkward conversation because you're parting ways. You don't do it in the middle of the day.
You're waiting until you're pretty sure it's going to be the last time you ever talk to that person.
Yeah, or the last time you're going to see them for a period of time.
I like ever.
Okay. Okay. Okay, Troy. Just way to make it weird.
Damn. It's pile on John night, apparently.
I like it this way. I feel warm.
Boy. All right. Well, that's it for our topic. I want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses come from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts, and we try to give bonus episodes each month for the specific tiers. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in that respective tier, including the Bad Movie Night exclusive episodes that are there. You know, we do have a public feed for that of older episodes, but all the new ones are behind a paywall. So if you want to help and you want to support the show, it's Patreon, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We've got a review of Bosch's legacy.
That's right. For 7 seasons, Titus Welliver has made Harry Bosch a household name, especially for Amazon Prime, with Bosch being one of the first scripted shows on the service. For all that time, he played a detective on the force, following much of the novels that are based on the same name. So the big question, Aaron, is this new version of Bosch something you actually wanted, or were you happy with the end of the 7th season?
I love Bosch. I love the show. The books are great. So I was ecstatic that they were coming back and they were doing like the PI version of Bosch. Because what Bosch Legacy, I even hesitate to call it a spinoff because I don't really think it's a spinoff so much as
a job change.
Yeah, it's a job change. There you go. It's an extension of the Bosch. He's still the same character. You know, we have Titus Welliver as Bosch. We have Madison Lins as Maddie. We also have Mimi Rogers as Honey Chandler. She's the attorney that often worked with Bosch and I was working with him here. There's an additional cast member of Mo, who's played by Stephen Chang, who is basically the tech guy that Bosch uses because he's a PI now. You know, he's out on the streets. It's very similar, except what they've chosen to do, and I have watched all the episodes, but because of embargo, I can only really talk to elements of the first couple. What they do different here is they're kind of looking at it from a different perspective, because Maddie, his daughter Maddie, is now a rookie on the police force, even though he was a cop for decades, right? He was a homicide detective for decades. So now she's learning the ropes as a detective. Meanwhile, he's out on the streets as a PI. So he doesn't have the access that he used to have. He used to be able to flash his badge and get things done, and now he has to work outside the system, which makes his job harder. Meanwhile, his daughter is learning how hard the actual system is to work inside of. So it's really fascinating. Plus, we have Honey Chandler's situation where she's working in the legal system. So it's still Bosch, but it's Bosch on the outside while his daughter's on the inside. And I thought it was a really interesting way to look at it, because throughout the series, we're getting, throughout the first season, which is on, I think it's called Freevee now. It used to be IMDb TV, but now it's Freevee. It's on Amazon Prime. It's their commercial model. But what we're seeing more now is cases that are covered over the entire season, which is exactly how it worked in the previous series. But now it's just different perspectives.
Now, if I remember correctly, he had like this long-term kind of nemesis in the original show, but now he's working with his nemesis in this one. So how did that work in the transition coming into this new version?
Honey Chandler. Well,
yeah,
she's a defense attorney, and they were adversaries for a long time. And in the last couple seasons, he came to have a begrudging respect for her and him. And she basically utilizes his resources as a PI for her benefit. Now, he's still the same old stubborn cop mentality. Like, there's certain cases he's not going to do. There's certain things he's not going to do. He won't work for somebody he thinks is guilty. That's his thing. He's just not going to do it. And, you know, that comes into play as well. And there is several overarching cases, like I talked about, that they kind of come in and out of. But they get along great. They have a very genuine respect for each other. But he also is very, very Bosch-like in that he will be very curt and kind of rude and mostly, a dick when he thinks he should be to her and her to him. Like, they play very well off each other. But I also feel like they have a solid respect for one another.
Now, you mentioned the daughter being on the force. Does the introduction of the daughter in this case, does it soften him up any? Or does he kind of still keep his same gruff demeanor? Do they have like a good father-daughter relationship as the series progresses?
Oh, they're a fantastic team. She was in the original series. I don't know if you watched it or not, but so she was in it throughout, and it was a very much an important relationship for Bosch because it was really the only thing that ever softened him on anything. Cause he's a very, very by the book, straightforward kind of guy. And in fact, I've been compared to him a lot because I probably parent the same way. I'm probably a little too gruff, but, yeah, it's a wonderful relationship. It's great to see her kind of grow up. And originally she was going to be a lawyer, and now she wants to follow in dad's footsteps. And there's definitely some of that, you know, he's her dad, but he also is not going to sit there and be paranoid about her safety. He's just, you know, trusting that she knows she has the tools to do what is right and to stay safe. It's a great relationship. I love their father-daughter relationship.
Well, if this season had 10 episodes, how many episodes are you telling people to watch?
All of them. If you like Bosch, you'll like this. I mean, and if you haven't seen Bosch, watch Bosch. But you can actually watch this from the get-go. I think it's pretty easy to pick up and watch. It just helps to know the character a little better.
Do they do any TV tropes in that first episode to like explain everything to you to catch you up after 7 years?
Yes. there is that clip that gives previously on Bosch, and then they kind of catch you up on where they are. But you need to at least get a feel for where the characters are. But if you've never watched Bosch, you're fine if you just pick up Bosch Legacy. It'll just take you a minute to, okay, now I get it. I get where he's coming from. He's a former cop. Now he's a PI. Daughter's a rookie cop. Okay, got it. You're not reliant on previous years of storylines to understand what's going on, which is good.
Cool.
I should also make sure that everyone knows that Bosch Legacy has already been renewed for season 2, so it is definitely coming back. So when you get to the end of the season, it's not like we talked about in our TV tropes. It's not something that you have to wonder, is it coming back? Is it coming back? It's definitely coming back. It was renewed. It will be back on Freevee in however long it takes to make another season of Bosch. And also I should mention, Viola Davis is in talks for a Peacemaker spinoff as Amanda Waller. So that'll be exciting. James Gunn, once again, back behind the camera, or at least as a producer. Any recommendations not previously talked about in previous episodes?
We were all watching Ozark all over the weekend, but I had everybody pinging me saying like, are you watching Under the Banner of Heaven? Are you watching Under the Banner of Heaven? Under the Banner of Heaven's really good. So I am super excited to finish Ozark hopefully tonight and then get into Under the Banner of Heaven tomorrow.
I started watching is it Silver Girls?
The what?
Apple Plus.
Shining Girls.
Shining Girls. I started watching that. That's pretty great.
You know what's important about that? I think people need to know. You know, I know I talked about it in our South by Southwest episode, but that's Elizabeth Moss, and she's a victim of an assault trying to work on a serial killer case with a reporter. There is a sci-fi bend to it that you might not know until you finish at least the first 3 episodes, and you'll start to get it. Right? Would you agree with that?
You start picking it up pretty quickly. I think by the end of the first episode and the beginning of the second episode, you're like, okay, there's something really going on here.
Yeah. And that's, Troy, I'm telling you, you need to watch this because you love when they do things like this in shows. Would you agree, John?
Yeah, he absolutely would.
And it's so Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, she's great.
And it's Elizabeth Moss. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Continue.
No, we're good.
Okay. I haven't really watched a whole lot. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Again, our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter @rjohndraws. Amanda and Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and @SinkIntoThis. Troy @TroyHeinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld. And me, I'm presenting Hitchcock and @AaronSmirks. Now we're leaving, but first, our Ho Teachable Minute. We're going to talk about Ozark after the credits roll. So just hang tight. Ho Teachable Minute. Troy, in 1 minute or less, tell the audience one thing you've learned from any TV or movie.
If you are sitting in traffic, make sure you don't honk a horn at another person because you don't know if the person you're honking at is actually the accountant for a drug cartel.
Jesus. Again, another Ozark reference?
That sequence was so great. I was just like, is he going to stop? I don't know if he's going to stop.
And what's bad is you can't really allude. You can't say anything more. Because you don't want to spoil anything.
You sure can't.
No.
But it was a great ending to the episode.
There's a great moment in Ozark. I get what you're saying. Don't do road rage.
Yeah.
Right?
Both sides of the coin. Don't honk at another person and don't get out of your car if they honk at you.
Yeah. Stay in your car, roll up your windows, call 911.
Right.
Okay. For those of you that have already seen the series finale to Ozark, you can stick around. I'm going to talk about the Ozark finale here in a second. But for those of you that have not, that's the end of this show. So please keep an eye out for my new Amber Heard alert that will be arriving for Diddy Naps soon. Maybe I can add a Johnny Depp app just to make it even. And remember, the next time you head to a theater to see Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness or whatever the hell else you want to see, there's a lot out there. Buy popcorn. All right, we are going to discuss Ozark series finale and the show as a whole. If you have never watched Ozark, well, thanks for listening to this heavily spoilery discussion. It's odd, but welcome. We're going to go forward as if anyone listening has watched the show. You already know the story points. We're really just going to discuss what you've already watched. And we're just going to break down the pivotal character moments in this series finale. Basically, the final few seasons or few episodes of season four. And for that, please welcome from The Gaming Outsider and former host of The Hollywood Outsider, Scott Clark.
Hey, what's going on, man? Long time no see.
Welcome back and here.
Yeah, I know, dude. Looking forward to man camping with you.
Yeah, that's right. We are going backpacking in a few weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a first for me. Yeah. Make sure I get that dirt under my fingernails, right?
You should probably watch Deliverance and a couple other movies just for research.
You got a pretty mouth.
Just to get prepared.
Yeah. Ring-a-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding.
Wow, what a segue.
Let's, you're welcome.
Let's talk about Ozark. Now, you've been watching it since day one with this beautiful blue hue that they love to use to represent the Ozarks, I guess.
Sure.
And I want to say, before we actually get into the show, before we get into this final season and the whole series as a whole, can we just give a shout out to the Ozark title card? Because for four seasons, we've been enamored with trying to figure out what each of the four pictures represent throughout the episode. And I only late to the game realized that the O is the O and each of the four one is supposed to be a Z and A and R and a K in mm-hmm. their representation. So that part I came late to the game too, but isn't that fantastic?
It's awesome. And it became such a fun thing because they never outright spelled it. You know, what it was. It was almost like giving a spoiler without giving a spoiler, even though it wasn't really a spoiler. I don't know. It was so much fun because I would look at it, and because I'm binging this show, I'm going through them just at a breakneck speed. So it's really hard to remember even those four little things. I sit there and I stare at it and I try to memorize it. Okay, there's a fist, there's a snake. There's a racket. I don't even remember what they are. And I try to see if I can catch where they are within the episode. And I'm lucky if I get two of them.
Yeah.
Without actually going back and scouring. You know what I mean?
What I like to do now that I've kind of gotten quite a way, cut a ways into the show, obviously, is when I get done, sometimes I'll go back, most of the time, I'll go back to the beginning of the episode, fast forward to where the title card popped up, and I'll just go, that's it. Okay, now I got it. And if I don't figure it out, I might watch it again. You know, it's a fun game.
It adds rewatchability, like you're saying. We don't get that in TV shows a lot. You know, like if you go back to like The Sixth Sense, it was fun to go back and watch The Sixth Sense to pick up the little clues that gave you the you know, a little nod to the twist ending. And it's kind of the same thing here. It makes it a little bit more fun to go back and watch it again if you want to. I don't know if I want to rewatch it, honestly.
Well, we'll talk about that momentarily. Yeah. But I did recently see Jason Bateman, who said that each episode, he would basically sit down with a designer and he would give them a bunch of different things that were very pivotal to that particular episode and had to come after the actual title card would pop up. And then the designer would basically give him a bunch of different options and he would kind of pick which ones weren't too spoilery, which didn't give too much away, but also were very, you know, hinting at what was to come. So it's just kind of a clever process that he put that much effort into it.
Right. Yeah. And it seems like such a little thing, but it's not. It's just really...
I really do love it.
I've never seen anything like that in a show before, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it was great. All right. So I want to talk about some of the character arcs, but first, as a series finale, as a whole, you know, you and I have been through some series. You and I watched the Lost finale together. Mm-hmm. We watched the Game of Thrones finale together. Breaking Bad. We've done it all. So now we're at Ozark. How did you feel when this one was all over? Satisfied? Left under serve? Where did you land? Where did your bird land?
Huh? Where did my bird land? Oh, my goodness. Well, I feel like compared to a lot of people, I'm a little bit easier to please when it comes to this because...
That's not true, dude. I sat there with the Lost finale with you, and I thought you were going to punch somebody.
That's the exception. But, I mean, I liked the ending of Game of Thrones. You know, I still don't understand the just absolute hatred for that. Did it feel a little rushed? Yes. Did I still enjoy it?
Exactly.
Yeah. I just really had a good time with it.
Same.
I'm not going to get into a lost argument with anybody anymore. I'm not going to say anything because I just
you
don't
won't
like
get along with me. I was there. We're both on the same page. I'm good.
No,
with
no, no,
it.
No. I just
except
don't want emails.
For Bran. I mean, he's got the best story. The hell he does. What right. are you talking about?
I have issues with some things that just felt a little too convenient and, you know, some things that I question about how the law works. But I still found...
You mean in the Ozarks?
Well, I mean, in general. I mean, we'll get into it, but oh. there's a court thing that I don't understand and maybe you know better than okay. I do because you sure. actually have a history in criminal justice a little bit more yeah. than I do. But, there are some things that I just kind of tilt my head and go, what is that? What was that decision made for? But I still just really enjoyed it. I just love everything about the characters, which is funny to say because none of them are likable at all. Even the ones you liked at first aren't likable.
I still like Ruth. I still loved Ruth up until the end.
Well, you do like her, but she's still not a good person.
Fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She tried to be.
Right? Didn't she kill her dad or uncle or something? So
yeah. Who didn't she kill?
That's true.
At this point. So I had some minor gripes with things that just kind of didn't make 100% sense, but I was just still riveted to my screen the entire time. I could not stop watching it. There's a reason I watched this. I didn't get to start watching it until like Sunday, and now it's Tuesday and I finished. Granted, it's only 7 episodes, but every chance I could, I was watching this. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love the final shot. I thought the final shot was great.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah.
I've loved the tone of this show, and I think part of my love for it came from my love for Breaking Bad, which is what I kind of expected it to be a little bit.
And it was at the beginning. It really kind of was,
yep.
right? I mean, it was.
I was just going to say that it kind of really came into its own and did its own thing in a way that I really appreciated. So I'm not going to go as far as saying it stuck the landing. I mean, the final shot, like I said, was really cool. But I still found myself immensely satisfied. How about you?
Yeah. What I found interesting was, to me, the ending felt very Ozark. It felt very much like the Ozark we know. The birds yeah. manipulate their way to a win. Everybody else suffers, most of all Ruth. So, I mean, everything felt very much like Ozark. So, you know, there's many people that thought it was going to be a happy ending, and I don't understand what show they've been watching. This show shouldn't have had a happy ending because people. They're doing awful things constantly, you know?
I mean, if you think about it, I don't know how far into the spoilers you want to go. It kind
right
of
now, open world. You can say what you want.
I mean, it kind of was a happy ending for the birds.
Was it though? I mean, if you think about it, I mean, don't get me wrong. I will say the final shot when Jason Bateman does the smirk, when his son picks up that rifle and he's holding it at him and he knows his son is finally okay. He's on Team Bird finally. He's, mm-hmm. you know, the car crash brought him closer to mom again or whatever. And he has this little smirk. And I'm just like, all right. That's probably my favorite shot of this particular set of episodes.
Just because it was a smirk. Come
yeah,
on, admit it.
I'm a big smirk fan. Yeah. I love that. But now I forgot totally what my point was. What was my point? What were we talking about?
We were talking
lost
about
in the smirk.
You lost in the smirk.
Yeah.
We were talking about, about it being a happy ending.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it was really. It was as happy as they could get, but I still think the ending kind of leaves you with the implication that it never stops. It's them having to cover them tracks, them having to stay ahead of things. Like, they're going to have to hide this body. Now they're going to have to figure out how to launder the money because Ruth is dead. You know, they're going to have continuous obstacles. Like, that is their plot in life. They're just going to have the advantage to being this very advantageous family.
Right. Wow. But that's the thing is it's now a family.
That's true. I mean, they win in that respect. Yes, they win in that respect.
Because now Jonah, you know, he right before that, when he's at the gala, he's talking about how he's going to go straight, at least until he gets to high school, which I thought was a pretty funny line.
Pretty funny, yeah.
And not anymore. I mean, he's done. He's full bore all in on this. So it's almost like you're cheering for the bad guy. You know what I mean? I mean, it's what we've been doing all season anyway, I guess.
The whole series, really. Now, what did you think in terms of, you know, at the beginning of, quote-unquote, season 4, which is the first batch of episodes we got back in January, you know, we got the snapshot of the car crash, right? So you got that opening car crash, and then we get the car crash, and apparently it's a way that brings the kids back to mom, I guess. I mean, it's the implication because mom was dying. We got all excited. We're all probably cheering. And then she comes back to life. We're like, damn it. Yeah. But the kids are like, oh, mom, we almost lost you. And apparently all forgiveness is there.
No, that really bugged me, honestly, because it had been such a long gap in between the end of season or the end of the first half, of whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
4A.
You're going to have to kill me. That season. Yeah.
Oh, man. So good. Oh, best what a great way to end that quote unquote season. But it had been so long since I watched that part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I did not even remember the car crash up until right when it was about to happen. I was like, oh, that's right. That's happening. And you were led to believe that that was going to be way more important than it ended up being. Like, I thought that was going to be like the end of the birds or something. And when they pulled Wendy out and she was still alive, I was like, come on. I mean,
it was pretty cheap. It really was.
I mean, part of us was cheering that that's just how Wendy was going to go, right?
I thought that would have been great because, hey, it's not the cartel. It's not something like that. She went out from a stupid car crash. I think that would have been amazing. But no, they kind of, this brings the family together. And, you know, almost losing a loved one would bring you back together, probably. But it just felt very manufactured.
It just felt very Deus Ex Machina.
Yes. There you go.
And I just, that doesn't seem like that belongs in a real life situation.
Agreed.
To me.
Agreed. So now you've got the whole picture. Is this overall a great series now that you finished it? We're going to talk about the characters here in a second, but is this a great series now that you finished it? Is it a good series? Like, where do you, Breaking Bad is, I know for us, like the pinnacle, but where do you put this one?
I mean, Game of Thrones is still my most rewatchable. But yeah, Breaking Bad, I actually rewatched Breaking Bad this past summer, and it's fun, but I feel with a show like that, much like Ozark, it's not as much fun watching it a second time.
Yeah, you know, because it's all about the twists, right?
It's all about the twists and it's all about the reveals and what's going to happen next. And when you already know what's going to happen next, part of the shine is gone.
Yeah.
It's not a fault of the show. It's just hard for me to get as excited about it. Something like Game of Thrones, I rewatch and I'm picking up new things every single time. You know what I mean?
Once a year, the whole series.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, I did for 10 years. So once a year, I watched every episode as it was released. But Ozark is because its tone is so dark and that mystery is kind of gone. I probably will rewatch it, but it's not going to be as much fun watching it the second time. And rewatchability is a big thing for me in television, films, everything.
Sure.
So I would probably rate this one, boy, where would I rate it compared to Breaking Bad? I think this is a better show than Breaking Bad. I do.
Wow. That's a big swing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that
by many people's accounts, but
I think it's just a more quality show. I mean, obviously it's newer. So some of the technology and stuff, whatever, but sure. I mean, just like the title card thing that you talked about is there. Jason Bateman as a character, he just was slimy, but you cheered for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really hard to pull off. And the different character arcs and even though you knew people were going to die, still when it happened, it still felt shocking. You know, you knew somebody was going to die. but I think I like Ozark better. Just the tone was grittier.
I don't know if I like it better. I still think Breaking Bad's a better series. But I have thoroughly enjoyed, mostly because I don't think it perfectly stuck the landing. And it's not that I don't think the ending fit. It's that some of the way that they got to certain character endings I thought were really cheap and kind of lazy.
That is totally fair, actually. Breaking Bad really did stick the landing.
I think they completely nailed it. That makes a big difference. But I will say Breaking Bad is really not incredibly rewatchable until you get about mid-season 2. So you've got a big batch of episodes that are really kind of stale. It's like once you get to a certain point, it's like all of that has been backstory building up to, okay, now we're on a roller coaster. Where Ozark, I was enthralled kind of the whole series. I mean, they had characters and they had character moments that were catching my attention and the whole time.
And character growth,
too.
Growth. I mean, obviously the kids literally grew, which was interesting to see because, I mean, they were really children. Yeah. I mean, they're children.
Aged 64 years in a span of 4 years.
They referenced that in the show a couple times too. Funny. I think Ruth said somehow he looked like a man, which, you know, was one of those things you grow up to hope you never say to a person. I find myself, no, you're getting so big. Shut up, Scott. I hate that I say that to kids now. Like, drives me crazy. But yeah, you might be selling me on it a little bit. They did stick the landing, but Ozark was just so good start to finish. And Breaking Bad had a couple filler episodes, and there was some tongue-in-cheek humor kind of stuff that I don't dislike. I just think it fits better when it's all serious, like Ozark did it.
All right, let's start with some of the characters here, and then we'll get to the big ones. But the Navarro cartel, Omar, Camilla, Nelson, Father Benitez in this final season. You know, Omar ends up dead, killed by his sister, Camilla, and she ends up, you know, taking out Ruth, which already makes her one of my least favorite characters now. So what did you think of, specifically as it came to this final season, in terms of the Navarro cartel? Anybody really stand out? Any moments that stood out for you?
Well, the scene where Omar is killed, I was kind of questioning myself a little bit about whether or not that was Camilla killing him off. Part of me kind of hoped that he was going to be, that he actually was being released, like you were sort of led to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, I felt like, would have been a really interesting twist if he just shows up at the gala or something like that.
That would have been great. He's just standing outside going,
yeah, that would have been like this icy cold stare. I don't know. Camilla just felt too pivotal of an action for a character that we were introduced to the second half of this season.
Yeah, it was really late in the game.
I feel like she didn't earn killing Ruth.
Yeah, that was a huge moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I don't think you should have been the one that killed Ruth. I don't know why. I think there's a very large list of reasons that I think Ruth's death was just shit. It was really shortchanged. It was kind of cheap. It didn't feel like Ruth's character at all. I mean, I'll get there when we talk about Ruth.
Okay. But, 'cause I have thoughts too.
Yeah, man. It just boggles my mind. But what fascinates me about the Camilla character is that technically Ruth would be alive if Marty would have done what he wanted to do from the beginning. But because he stuck with Wendy, Wendy's really the reason Camilla got killed. Because
Ruth?
Really the reason that Ruth got killed. Sorry. Because he multiple times said, tell Omar she's dead. Da, 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 da. And then we would still have Ruth Langmore in the picture. Mm-hmm. But so it's really Wendy's fault. Once again, it's all Wendy's fault.
Yeah, a lot of things were Wendy's fault.
She's awful.
Like every time Marty gets things in order, she just comes in and jacks it up.
Man, it really became something where you just want to throttle her, you know?
Well, so did Marty, as we saw.
Yeah. Oh, God, that was so good. Well,
that was,
we're not there yet, but.
Yeah, we'll get there. I found myself questioning Wendy's motives, honestly, because she claims to be all about her family, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she seems so obsessed with the benefit, which I
the power. The power. She wants the
power.
Is
that all it was power? Because every time she got excited, it seemed like it was about money.
Yeah, always about money. It's about the power because, just like her dad alluded to, she's been hunting for more her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she's willing to kill her own brother to get it. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's all about her family until it gets in the way of what she wants. So to me, that's just selfish power.
Right. She was even, where she like embarrassed him by getting on her knees and all that kind of stuff. Like just.
And he's like, stop it. I'm not buying it anymore. And then she just got up and I'm like, was that an act? That was pretty good. It's good act. I mean, don't get me wrong. She's a great actress. Laura Linney is fantastic.
She really is. She's been one I really admired a lot for several years. But she just nailed that role. And when she like hit her head on the window.
Oh, yeah, that was so chilling.
Oh, and then no reaction, just kind of stares into the camera like, man.
All right, well, we got to hurry so we can actually talk about these characters more.
Okay.
Claire Shaw, she doesn't really do much except she gets Ruth killed. I was kind of mad that like, why did you break? Oh, because she said she's going to cut you from Belle to Sternum or whatever that scene is. I'm not going to say the actual
She didn't
scene.
Say Belle to Sternum.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
I have never heard that terminology used that way. That was great. When she said, I was like, that was the coldest thing. And then she just right out says it.
Broke.
And the look on Marty's face, like, what do we do now?
Please don't say we were there. And she actually did keep them safe, which I thought was funny.
Right.
So.
See, and I honestly thought that Camilla knew and was just trying to get confirmation.
I did too, but I couldn't see how she could know that.
Right. But the way that she was coming across was that she knew.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out how or why. I also couldn't understand how Camilla, how she was able to orchestrate a hit on her own brother.
I mean, she's basically running the cartel now. I mean, she's got the pull. All she has to do is make a phone call.
I suppose, but man.
And Marty's still got that number, by the way. He still has that number if he needs to have her taken out.
Mm. So we'll never know, though.
No, we'll never know unless they get a spinoff. Do the Ruth spinoff where her eyes open. Pow, she's still alive somehow. And bam, now she's running
the Ozark
Casino.
That would piss me off so much. I mean, as much as I love that character.
I'd watch it. I'm not going
to
lie.
I would have to watch it. But I just felt bad for Ruth because you knew she had to. We're getting there. Hang on.
Let's do the kids. Jonah becomes complicit with murdering the former PI who gathers Ben's ashes that, I hate to break it to him, is not admissible in court, but whatever. Charlotte really had little to do this season. So in terms of the kids, what did you think about their send off? Like, they're basically now back in the family and they're part of the Godfather now, I guess.
I mean, it happened too quick. They both had written off Wendy just like we did as viewers. And, you know, her checking herself into a mental institution and then the car accident just doesn't seem, I mean, they're kids too, but they've been acting like adults this entire time. And all of a sudden they're going to be like, mommy, I just have a hard time. It felt even quicker than Anakin turning.
I want to kill all these kids. Basically, that was how quick the turn was.
Pretty much.
I agree with you. It really frustrated me too, because as I'm watching it, I'm just like, so now you guys have just forgiven her? I mean, Jonah in particular has spent the last entire season really hating her because of what she did to Ben. And now he's just, all right, you almost died. We're good now.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's still family and it's, you know, and I mean, if you look at it, he could be having selfish motivations by killing that PI as well, because he's complicit. He could be looking at juvenile. He could be having a record. You know what I mean? So, and it's not like it's the first time he pointed a gun at somebody.
No, I mean, it's really been building to that moment, which is funny because they've said on record that they didn't have the ending mapped out from the beginning. So they've been, you know,
Somebody admitted it.
Yeah, somebody admitted, you know, they didn't have we've got a Bible that we've been going by the whole time. No, they're like, no, you kind of knew roughly where we wanted to go, but we changed a lot of things and da 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 da. So they didn't know how they were going to end it until more recently, last season or two.
I felt like the only purpose for the kids being there this season was Wendy. You know, having them stripped away from her by her father, which, you know, as we learn, was just his way of sticking it to her. That's all he wanted to do.
Well, you know, that's all she seems to want to do to other people. So, I mean, it runs in the family in many respects.
And I love how self-righteous he was, too. And
much like she is. It's very much a father-daughter right there, man. Like, they're just total power.
That scene where I cannot remember the father's name now. I just know it as Wendy's dad.
That's what
when he's drunk. And he meets Ruth outside the hotel. I just that scene felt so uncomfortable to me because he's like basically. So, what was your relationship like with Ben? You know, outside of the physical, like it was
a little awkward.
That's like, yeah, you're totally picturing me naked right now. That's exactly what that line was to me. He always preferred brunettes. I was like, did you really just say that? I mean, she obviously is a brunette. I mean,
And it's Nathan, by the way. His name was Nathan. Yeah, she's obviously not a natural blonde.
Yeah.
I mean, she is. It didn't look like it, though.
I mean, her eyebrows are...
Yeah, her eyebrows are brown.
It was like Daenerys all over again.
All right, so let's talk about Ruth full on. More importantly, for at least to begin with, how Ruth dies. Because I have such problems with... This is the problem that I have. So I think I understood completely why Ruth was going to die. You know, as soon as she killed Javi, I'm like, oh, she's going to die at some point in the season. You know, she's kind of sealing her own death warrant. But she has such street smarts throughout the entire show. She's playing everything by ear. Even when Nelson, you know, from the cartel is chasing her, she goes right to the police station, runs in it because she's not stupid. You know, she doesn't do stupid things. She knows when she can come up and confront somebody and when she can't. And she pulls up to her home where she just talked about making a circular drive. So she has the ability to turn around, obviously, right? With the way that they've carved out the property. The car's there. You know, it's a car. She knows it's a cartel car. And she gets out and walks over to it and wanders around. And that's where Camilla comes out of the darkness. And I'm just like, I have no problem with you killing Ruth off because I understand why you felt like you needed to. But that was stupid because you just shit all over 4 years of character growth and explaining who this character is for a cheap and lazy death.
Yep. And couple that with Camilla getting an unearned kill.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it should, yeah. if you're going to kill off Ruth, at least let it be somebody that earned it.
Or make it worthwhile. I don't know. I mean, she deserved a bigger exit, you know, a more righteous exit, I guess. I mean, I did like the, I'm not sorry your son was a murdering bitch and now I know where he got it from. I thought that was great. But, and then are we going to get on with it or what? I mean, she went out on her own terms, but it's just how she got to the point where she was standing there was so idiotic for her character.
Yeah. Seriously, like who gets out?
You make the effort, right? You try to, oh no, this is bad. I'm turning around. I'm out. You know, yeah. I'm not taking a
chance. That's what she told Rachel to do.
Yes.
When, what was his name? The guy that the
Nelson.
Nelson was there. You know, get your rifle, get out of there right now. And, you know, because of that, she was able to turn that around and make it, you know, fertilizer for the pool. why would you think that's a good thing? If you see another car in the driveway, why would you even go all the way in the driveway?
And the thing that bugged me is everything building up to that moment, I thought was perfectly executed. Because except for the fact that Wendy somehow now cares if Ruth lives or dies. And I think they did paint the picture more so. I don't know if we can bear it because she knows Marty loves Ruth. So I think she's looking at it from that perspective. But in the same token, you know, they paint it so Marty can't do anything. The kids can't do anything. Wendy, nobody can do anything. Okay. She's left to her own devices. That part worked great for me. I'm fine with all of that. It's just once she gets to her own property and she does nothing defensive at all. Nothing.
The only thing I could say with that is Ruth is finally, for the first time in her life, somewhat at ease. She's got her name cleared.
So she dropped her guard is kind of the argument?
She dropped her guard, yeah. Yeah. That's all I could see, but that just seems like a really big F up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess she just went through the FBI thing. She thinks we're all on the same page. She doesn't see any reason why they would be after her now. I guess you could possibly look at it that, but I have a hard time swallowing. She's that stupid now.
I mean, put yourself in that situation. You're not doing anything illegal that I know of. And you come home and you live out in the middle of, you know, nowhere, and you see a parked car with its engine on sitting there.
Conversation's already over. You don't have to keep going. I'm out. I saw the car. I left. Unless I recognize it and I know it's my sugar boo waiting for me to come back, do a little levitating, then no, I'm done.
Yeah. So yeah, it's hard to accept that Ruth would just do that. I just guard down or too brazen are just not acceptable reasons to make that kind of a mistake. But
on the same token, still probably my favorite character in the show, just because she's so
everybody's favorite,
unpredictable.
Right?
Yeah. That's why I'm actually pretty surprised they killed her off. Not that I didn't think that the show wouldn't build to that. She is so popular a character. I thought they would have found a way to make her live. Or were you not surprised at all?
I wasn't surprised. Like you said, I don't know if I saw it quite when Javi killed her. I thought she might survive that. But as soon as she decided to go straight, I was like, there's no way. Any character that in anything that is doing as a criminal and decides to go straight, they've signed their death warrant. That's just how it works in film and TV.
And maybe that's what they were going for, that she's dropped her guard because she thinks she's on the straight and narrow now and she's out of harm's way. And if that's the case, I don't think they delivered it well. They executed it well.
I did love watching her sit down with the judge and trying to force herself to say ma'am and not swear and stuff was highly entertaining.
That's great.
She played that role so well.
Oh, man.
Is that her? I've never heard her speak outside of this. Is that her actual accent?
No, okay. Julia Garner? No, that's not her natural accent. She's a great actress. She really is. Very talented.
I want to see her in something else just to see how she does with something else.
Inventing Anna. She does this accent that I don't know what the hell it is. It's interesting, but I don't know what the hell it is. I think it's Germanish, but she's pretty good in the show. It's an odd show. So that's on Netflix, too. It's going
to
be the Julia Garner
episode just to hear it.
All right. So anything more on Ruth Langmore before we move to Marty?
I will miss that character. She kind of made the F word just every other in a way that doesn't seem egregious. I don't know why.
I don't know shit about fuck. What?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite lines in the whole show.
Oh, can I do want one more moment with her that I just thought I really liked a lot was when she woke up and just was talking to Wyatt and her uncles and her dad and everybody was sitting around, you know, singing a song on the guitar. I thought that was really well done.
Jason Bateman directed the episode. That that is probably one of the most impressive shots that I've seen in TV show in a while. The way that they orchestrated that, because they were coming and going, and you know, just well played.
Yeah,
really heartfelt.
Because I think you were led to believe that it was a flashback for a second, because mm-hmm. there were flashbacks specifically with Wyatt earlier, and like, oh, this is a flashback. No, this is Ruth reliving the good old times when things were the way they were before everything got all jacked up. Even when she, you know, had done some illegal things, but she was still happy.
Or how she thought they should be, or how they mm-hmm. would be if she wouldn't have been tangled with Marty. You know, that they would still be around, and maybe we would be at this point if we hadn't fallen down this well of hell.
Right. And then when 3 came up and sat with her and says, "Who are you talking to?" And she's like, "Nobody." And his response immediately was, "You're talking to Wyatt, aren't you?"
Yeah.
And then she's just like, "Yeah. Mind if I join you?" Of course. Like, in any other scenario, someone would just keep playing it off like, "No, I'm not talking to anybody." I just loved that. You yeah. never see that kind of a thing when somebody's like talking to somebody that's deceased. I found that whole thing just completely touching.
I did too. That was great mention. Great mention. All right. So Marty, let's start with this breakdown. You love this. So why did you love his breakdown where he's obviously pulverizing Wendy on the street?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, because Marty has been so cool and collected to a point. I mean, but even when he's just completely agitated, he just looks like his feathers are ruffled and he never really lets loose. So when he has this road rage moment on the side of the road and just starts beating the living snot out of this stranger, it was cool seeing him just kind of let out all of 5 years of frustration in this one moment. But at the same time, even Wendy looking on is like, oh shit, I'm that person.
He's beating the shit out of me. That's what she saw. And she even said in the next episode, you know, I know what that was.
What a way to end that episode. It was just a perfect way to end that episode and then start the next one with the kids picking him up, you know, 20,000 cash and bail by a 17-year-old girl. That was awesome. I really love that moment. It was finally time for Marty to just let out some aggression, and you know, you paid the price for it, obviously, but that was awesome.
Well, I think everybody's been waiting for him to blow up on her, right? Because she undermines him constantly, every mm-hmm. single thing that he does. And he's the reason that you're here. Now, don't get me wrong. She's made some really good strategic moves. I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. On the same token, she's also made every single thing he does harder. Every single thing they do as a family, more difficult, harder, mm-hmm. more of a struggle, because she's so desperate for power. And all he wants to do is get out of this alive. That's all right. He really cared about the whole time. So I thought it was kind of cool how they didn't have the blow up take place to her. He never actually blows up on her. Mm-hmm. He blows up on someone else, some poor random sucker. And I thought that was very apropos, and it was kind of a cool way to do it. Because I think that's how most people would. They would not necessarily that they would beat the crap out of him, but they would blow up on someone else. That's what you do when you know you're afraid you can't do that to the person you're with. So you go and you unload on somebody else, right?
Right. And as frustrated as he was with her, he still loved her.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew that from the very first episode when he was watching videos of her banging some other dude.
To a fault, he loved her.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just, that's love. And up until the end, even when she just messed everything up, you know, he kind of faltered a little bit when he spoke to Charlotte about it.
Yeah.
Which kind of, you know, backfired on him later on, because the look on Wendy's face when Charlotte says that, I was like, oh, you idiot. You idiot. But yeah, he loved her. And I mean, if you can survive through that, all that hell, mm-hmm. then the rest of your relationship should be easy, right?
Should be a breeze at this
should
point.
Should be. So, yeah.
Now, do you feel, now that the show's come to a conclusion, do you feel that he truly loved Ruth like a daughter, like many people have speculated, or ultimately not so much? Because I don't think if he loved her like a daughter, he would have done something. You know what I mean?
I don't know what he could have done. Because at that point, if he did anything, then it would have been his actual kids that would have been harmed. So,
right. Well, that's what I'm saying. He wouldn't have let, if it was Charlotte, he would have done something anyway. He would have figured something out, you know, but I think he would have tried.
I think that he loved Ruth more because I think he actually respected her for her doing what she did, even though it screwed him over. You know, cutting off the money laundering, I think he got it and he understood it. And even the way he talked to her is like, I just need to do this one more thing for me. I appreciate what you're doing, but this is going to cause problems for me and my family. and she stuck to her guns. And I think when he just walked up from that conversation and walked out as quickly as he did, that was him saying, I get it. That's probably what I would do if I were in your situation. So I think it was less about daughterly love and more about respect. Because he saw her grow as a person as well. She wanted out of this stuff just as much as he did, even before he did, probably.
And she actually accomplished it, unlike him.
Right. Which says a lot about her as a character, too. Mm-hmm. Because Jason Bateman's Marty is hyper intelligent. Why? Did you ever find, like, when you saw him starting having conversations that you almost had this feeling of, I've heard this song and dance before, even though you're cheering for him?
And what? How do you mean?
Like, just the way that he weasels his way out of things, but through conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like when he tried to talk to the kids into staying and not going to North Carolina or South Carolina, mm-hmm. wherever it was. And I was just, and even Jonah was like, that's all you do is talk.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's been so long with Marty that I start to read through that and just be like, I want you to succeed, but I just want you to do it a different way than just this calm talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very much so. I think he really was, because it seemed like he was always he was proud of Jonah when he went off on his own. He was proud of Ruth when she, you know, wiped her slate clean and got on the up and up. He just wants benefits for himself as well. But I feel like respect is the right way to look at it.
Oh, yeah. That scene where Marty has to show up to help him cover Jonah's tracks at his hotel room. Mm-hmm. I think that was in the first half of the season. I love that. It was like dad helping son with, you know, his homework or something.
I'll write your essay for you. All right.
Yeah. But it was it was highly illegal money laundering across overseas. I kind of thought that was pretty funny.
I just love how proud he was. Mm-hmm. He's so proud of his criminal son. Ah, look at that. He's laundering money now. Good for you.
He even taught him how to do it. Taught him what money laundering was.
Absolutely. And he's taken after his dad.
Yeah.
So that anything else on Marty? Anything you want to mention before we move on to the big kahuna?
I mean, more on just Jason Bateman as an actor. I think, I don't know if I would have watched the show if I hadn't
agreed
known that Jason Bateman was the quote-unquote lead
and made a character that's instantly likable despite where he's at.
Right. I mean, you kind of feel sorry for him right off the bat, which mm-hmm. which makes it easy for me to like a character anyway. That's just a personal thing. My wife likes to make fun of me for that. You like this character because you feel bad for him. Well, yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
But yeah, he was instantly likable, like you said, just the way that he talked and carried himself and was calm and composed. And he's just such a fantastic actor. I don't know if I would have given the show a shot on the first season. I probably would have watched it eventually, but Jason Bateman, I'm on board.
He's one of my favorites. And mm-hmm. I was talking to, you know, Brian, former host of the show. And he said,
no, who's that?
Brian Williams. He put it pretty fun. When I asked him what he thought of Ozark, he's like, I thought it was pretty good. But I'll be honest, I have 44 episodes is enough of looking at Jason Bateman staring at the ground. And I'm like, it's pretty accurate, actually, when you think about it. He does stare at the ground a lot.
Or just like the way that he like kind of gathers his thoughts. He's like, well, you know, we've, yeah, and this and, well.
Never loses his cool. Never explodes. Doesn't blow up.
Right. But there's something about the way that he does that, which I know is part of the character. Mm-hmm. How does a cartel buy that? Because he even did that with a cartel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a cartel, he didn't hesitate, like Omar said, you know, when they were trying to find the guy that
although he did make that slip up, which was pretty surprising, because I think everybody watching knew Camilla was behind that, right? I don't think that surprised anybody that Camilla was behind the hit on Omar. Did it?
I didn't.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Part of me thought that he was the guy. He had him to confess.
Well, you torture somebody long enough and they'll admit to anything. That's
possibly. Well, I mean, that's what he did. That's, yeah. In hindsight, that's what Marty did, was just like trying to make him break just to cover mm-hmm. and keep her
justify
safe.
The murder.
Yeah. And he felt horrible, but I kind of wanted to see him in Mexico more. When he went down there, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome.
Him as a boss for a couple episodes or something. Man,
that was pretty cool.
Hablo Espanol. All right. Well, I agree. Jason Bateman, phenomenal performance. And also, I mean, people should give him credit. He's the executive producer as well as he directed the entire first season, and he's directed numerous episodes, including the finale. He's a really talented director. He pulled off some really clever shots and really added some atmosphere to the show. He created the atmosphere for the show visually.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So Wendy gets a character retcon the last couple episodes, which is, you know, we'll talk about that in a second. But here's what happens. She's basically gets away with everything. She gets away with everything. And for the most hated character in all of Ozark, I would say, I would make that, I think, even more so than Darlene, honestly.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now we're supposed to believe that her losing her kids woke her up to her power-hungry ways and the fact that her husband wanted to beat the shit out of her via an innocent bystander. And now she also doesn't want Ruth to die. What? That's probably my biggest problem with the final two episodes is this quick retcon on Wendy and trying to end the series with her as, oh, she was just doing it for the family. She was selfish. She admitted to it. So it's all good. Instead of this very power hungry, conniving, manipulative, damn near evil woman that basically put Marty and every other character in the crosshairs all along the way. How did you feel about this? What I consider a character retcon. They basically tried to save the character very, very quickly and very, very cheaply.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, it was like a Deus Ex Machina situation where, like, you just bring something in just to make it this all work out that way. It almost felt like the first season and the second season were written independently of each other. Like they didn't have the second half of the season figured out before the first half.
It's possible.
I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying it felt like that because, you know, with the car thing at the beginning, you know, the rollover. Mm-hmm. That felt like it was going to be so much more impactful than a redemption for Wendy.
I think they thought that was going to be hugely impactful for the audience, but people that I've talked to, it did not impact anyone I've talked to as much as I think they felt like people were going to see that moment and be like, okay, now I get why the kids are back on her side because they almost lost mom. You know, she was manipulating us, sure, to get us with the institution thing, but she's just that desperate to keep us. She'll do anything to keep us. And now I don't want to lose my mom. I almost lost her here for a second, and now I'm back on board. And I thought, that's just not how those kids would be, so it felt generic. It felt cheap and lazy.
I'm also not 17 anymore, so it's hard to think like a 17-year-old again, or 15, or what is he, 15? Jonah's 15?
I think he's 36.
You know, it's been several, many moons since I've been that age.
Right.
I mean, obviously, kids are easily manipulated, and even more so by their parents. I mean, they look what they got away with up to this point. So, you know, you put yourself in a situation where you are vulnerable. That's what I was looking at. You know what I mean? And they're still kids at the end of the day. So, it's kind of believable.
Did you buy it?
No, I mean, it happened so quickly. You know, and again, I haven't been in a car accident in a long time. So that could have been, you know, there's so many factors that it's been so much time since it's happened to me.
Okay, let me put it in a different way. Do you buy the way her character was almost every episode prior to the last two episodes? And then the character it became the last episode and a half, I would say. I feel like they tried to retcon the entire character. Tim, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. Where she was so evil and dastardly, she's one note away from a frickin' Snidely Whiplash or whatever, just twirling her mustache. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it's all about her family. It's all about her kids. Well, meanwhile, her kids, she's been putting her kids in danger by shortcutting Marty all this time. Like every time she did one of these things and putting the cartel back in Marty's crosshairs, that is putting her kids in danger and never gave a thought to it. But now all of a sudden, we're supposed to see that that's a priority. That's her priority.
No, I mean, I didn't feel like she was vindicated. As a viewer, I never felt vindicated for her. She was vindicated in the eyes of the kids, but it's also their mom.
Sure.
You know, we're never going to forgive her, but that doesn't mean her own children wouldn't.
Children do forgive their parents for some awful things.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of believable. It's nothing that I don't even think the writers intended the audience to forgive her. That's just what the characters did.
Just the kids. We're just supposed to believe that the kids forgave her. I just thought it happened at light speed. If she would have began that change probably at the beginning of the second half, I probably would be more on board, but it was only the last. But then again, I mean, you have the extreme possibility of losing her children, of her children going away voluntarily. So maybe that mental stress was really she realized that she's going to do it for nothing if they're not there. So maybe, I mean, the pieces are there. I just don't think they worked for me. I guess
well, plus you got to remember, too, that is the first time we've seen Wendy somewhat at peace, right before the accident, when they're all in the car as a family, listening to music, commenting on, you know, how good the guy's voice is. All they have left to do is survive the gala. You know what I mean? Which everything was lining up to be exactly the way it was supposed to.
And then they'll be the
Omar's Kennedys. Going to be taken out. Yep. And then this accident happens. So that's the first time the kids have seen her not crazy. And then they almost lose her.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a stretch, but I could buy the kids.
Okay.
Turning.
Hey, you're kind of selling me. You're selling me a little bit.
All right.
I mean, I didn't hate it. It just, and I'm sure part of that is because I really wanted her to die strapped to a gas truck. Or something.
We all did.
Yeah. Cause she's
we all kind of wanted her to turn on Wendy at the road rage moment, I think.
She is basically the full representation of capitalism at its worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really is. And I thought it weird that Ruth somehow quickly forgave her or at least seemed to understand her. But then again, I also look at Ruth didn't have a mom. So once she kind of saw that she lost it because of her kids that, well, maybe I can kind of see where you're coming from now. You're doing this for your family to a degree. So
no, I think she did it for the kids. Ruth I don't think she did it for Wendy at all. I think she knew that.
But I don't think she did it for Wendy. I'm just saying, I think maybe she came to more of an understanding of why Wendy is the way she is.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
After meeting her father?
Yeah, after meeting her father. And then also seeing another side of her where she just loses it at the prospect of losing her kids, if that was genuine or if it wasn't, I guess that's your call.
Right. Speaking of, I loved the scene with her and Nathan in Nathan's hotel room. When he pulls the gun on her, that whole thing was just orchestrated.
Oh, with Ruth?
Yeah.
That was brilliant. How is she going to talk him into it? And, you know, I'm like, how is she going to talk him into it? And that was great. Mm-hmm. Get him drunk because she knows how drunks work.
Mm-hmm. And the whole, like, they're going to come running in here because they just heard that gunshot. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell them exactly what I did or I'm going to shoot you in the head. That one. That was such a great line. Oh, he was a scuzzy guy, too. This whole... Mm.
Now I'm mad at the birds again. She did all that and you still let her die. You sons of bitches.
Yeah.
Cowards. Yeah.
It was really hard to avoid spoilers too, man. There's somebody that posted on Facebook, like, F this show. And I was like, I don't even want to hear that. Because that to me meant someone's going to die that I don't want to die. And that meant Ruth is going to die. So.
Yeah, because it's her or Marty are the only two really options, I think, for
right.
for that. Is if someone's, because if Wendy dies, you know, you get a lot more celebratory reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, that's not to say that I dislike Laura Linney in any way. I think that's just how well she played that character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She's fantastic. I mean, there are very few characters on television that make me want to just like scratch something. I'm so mad. I visibly angry at the TV because of how
Joffrey
manipulative
was one of those.
Oh, she's very Joffrey like.
Mm-hmm.
Just twisted with it. Does it with a smile. That little condescending frickin'. Mm.
Oh, it's just like the. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, the condescension that she would always have in her voice when she knows she's got you.
Yep. Yeah, the look that she gave Nathan in the courtroom when she thought she had him.
Yeah.
Just like when the eyewitness, the PI didn't show up, she's just like, I gotcha. Isn't this feeling awesome? And then the whole thing turned. Oh, that was the thing I wanted to ask you.
Oh, okay.
That court proceeding where the judge is just like, well, you guys have been acting and living like adults for the past, few years. So you can do what you want.
Does it work like that? Is what you're asking?
That doesn't work that way, does it? There's no judge that's going to do that.
That is what's called TV court. Because I've been through many custody situations and knew nothing ever works that fast, ever. I don't care what state or county or anything you're in. You do not get a custody hearing that fast, not unless there's imminent danger. And then there would be like social workers and a bunch of other stuff. So no, that was TV court. I mean, like, can the kids make their own decision at that age? Yes, theoretically, but there would be at least three more court appointments that wouldn't work. It wouldn't be exciting television, put it that way.
Right. I just found it funny that I didn't know if that was a decision that could be made for kids, that like you can just make a decision as if you were an adult. That just didn't make any sense to me.
Well, here's the only thing I will say is if they see a threat with the current family members, they can make a temporary decision, but I can't see them taking them away from the parents without a full-on trial. You would have to have a full-on custody trial. That's
huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this decision was made. Now walk outside and make your decision, like right now.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so ridiculous, but it's TV. I mean, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, TV. Okay. So we're at the end, and I did love the very end, and Mel's saying, don't you get it? You don't get to win. You know, like they want to be the Kennedys or whatever. And Wendy's retort of, since when, is the most American retort I think I've heard on a TV show in a long time.
Right.
I love that because I was waiting for the screaming or yelling or begging or something. And instead she just full on went for it and said, since when? So this is basically the beginning of an American family dynasty. And now you've got Jonah on board. So that's the ending. The family wins essentially, even though they've got a lot of more different problems now, but they're more elevated socially. This is a capitalist dream, right? This is where they want to be. So is there anything you wish the show would have done differently, or is this the ending you kind of saw in your head overall?
I honestly didn't have any idea in my head of what was happening. I remember when I was watching an episode and it was just one of those beautiful shots over the water and the buoys and, you know, the blue like you're talking about. And I remember just thinking to myself, I have no idea where this is going. And I love that feeling where, you know, I'm just clueless as to which direction this is going to end up in the end. And I enjoyed it. I didn't have a problem. I mean, I had some issues like we talked about, but it stuck the landing. I'm going to miss these characters, though.
Oh, man. Big time.
Really, I'm going to miss these characters just to see what they're up to. Part of me kind of wants to see maybe in like 10 years, literal 10 years, not just 10 years in the universe, but 10 years down the line.
If Netflix is still around.
If Netflix is still around, yeah. And just see what's up with the birds. You could even not even call it Ozark, just call it the birds.
I think that's a band, isn't it?
No, I don't know.
It's a cool band name if it's not.
And yeah, just have, you know, Jonah now full on actual adult. He'll probably look about 114.
He'll be definitely white hair with a beard.
But, you know, like as a lieutenant for Marty, you know.
Or working, running the cartel somehow. Yeah. He's running the cartel.
Yeah.
Dad made that call a long time ago. So now Jonah's taking over. He's got the power.
I mean, I don't want to think about it right now, but in 10 years, I'll be ready, you know?
Yeah. But you don't want the Ruth spinoff where she just wakes up and. I
definitely want more Ruth, but I don't want it that way.
Okay.
That would be a very superhero comic bring back kind of thing. Like, no, there's no way you're going to like Camilla is not going to double tap. There's no
She's
way.
She's not going to double tap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, Jason Bateman, if you're listening, I'm okay with it. Scott'll still watch it. So if you want to,
I mean, I still will watch it, but I'd complain about it.
You better sell it. You better sell it.
Yeah.
She's got a hole in her heart. Well, I think I don't have anything more to say. I would like maybe in 5-10 years to see some kind of revisit, you know, and just see where it's at. That would be great.
I would definitely have to rewatch the entire 4 seasons again just to.
Have to.
Yeah. And it's not like it wouldn't be an enjoyable experience.
No, just be very blue. So blue. All right, Scott, thanks for doing this with me. Is there anything more as we close up that you want to say about Ozark or anything else? Where can people find you?
I think we pretty much covered it, but yeah, if you'd like to, if you missed the timbre of my voice and like to check out other things, check out the Gaming Outsider podcast where I talk about my favorite hobby, video games, thegamingoutsider.com. So it's been a blast chatting with you, man. We got to do this more often again.
Absolutely. Well, Game of Thrones is coming back, so just saying.
Oh yeah, are we gonna get together with our group again?
We gotta do something, right? We gotta do something.
When is that happening, by the way?
I think it's August. It's August.
Let's do it.
Let's do great. It.
I miss getting together with our group and doing Game of Thrones.
I wish we would have done that for Ozark. That could have been an awesome way to watch this finale.
Well, and that's the one thing about Ozark is that it was released all at once. I find myself missing the week to week.
I do
once in a while.
I do
because then you feel obligated to binge watch and get through it.
Well, for Ozark, I had to because everybody was spoiling the hell out of it. And I had to get it done. I had to get through it.
I think Disney Plus with you know, Mandalorian stuff kind of made me realize how much I missed the week to week, and Severance. Although I had to watch that one all at once because I didn't watch it until it was already done.
That's on my list. I'm going to be checking that one out. But I think it adds to this particular show because this show is already so stressful. Every single episode of Ozark is stressful. So having to know that I had to get through it before somebody ruined it for me was also, it kind of led to more enjoyment and respect.
Yeah. And it really makes those cliffhangers not feel as much cliffhangers, because all I got to do is press a button and I'm in the next episode. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What cliffhanger? Next.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, more symbols. Write this down.
The only problem is like trying to fight to stay awake, you know, like one more episode.
I'm almost there. Oh, God. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you haven't seen Ozark yet, well, it's just weird because we ruined everything. So
yeah, pretty much.
All right, thanks, Scott. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Remember, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch streaming from home, buy popcorn.